Neville president, I mean, Professor Peter Singer, takes a look at George W. Bush's decisions and tries to analyze them in ethical terms. Was this a moral action? Was he morally right to go into Afghanistan? Was he morally right to go into Iraq? We've lost 670 soldiers and thousands of young Americans blinded and maimed in Iraq. And the question is, partly one of the questions that the president tried to deal with last night is it worth it? But Peter Singer is asking a somewhat different question. Was it morally right? And I think he's produced an extremely interesting book. All his books are interesting because the man is so rigorous. He has, believe me, the man is an ethical giant. He has a point of view on every issue, not all of which you have to agree with. I don't agree with him on everything. But the interesting thing is he argues his case so carefully. He is not one of those guys who ignores the strong argument against him in the hope that you'll ignore it. He really takes it on and deals with it. Now, sometimes he doesn't deal with it in a satisfactory way for me, but at least he tries to listen to every objection and every question and deal with it rigorously. Peter Singer, whom we will talk to at 1 o'clock on this show, or 5 after 1, he's looking at ethics in a global, indeed a cosmic perspective, which makes some obvious decisions perhaps not so obvious. Let me read you something from one of Peter Singer's books and see if he traps you the way he trapped me with the ethical dilemma here. This is from Peter Singer's book called The Singer Solution to World Poverty. One day when Bob is out for a drive, Bob is a very rich man who's saved up a lot of money and just to demonstrate to himself how wealthy he is, he went out and bought a Rolls Royce for $200,000. He totally loves this car, partly because it's a wonderful car, but partly because it's a symbol of his success in life. One day when Bob is out for a drive, writes Professor Peter Singer, he parks the Rolls Royce near the end of a railway siding and goes for a walk up the track. As he does so, he sees that a runaway train is running down the railway track. Looking further down the track, he sees the small figure of a child who's playing on the track, unaware of the train and very likely to be killed by the runaway train. He can't stop the train, and the child is too far away to warn of the danger, but he can throw a switch that will divert the train off of the main track down a siding. Unfortunately, it happens to be the siding where his Rolls Royce is parked. If he does that, probably nobody will be killed, but the train will destroy his beloved Rolls Royce. Thinking how much he loves that car and the financial security it represents, Bob decides not to throw the switch. The train charges on the same track. The child is killed. But for many years to come, Bob enjoys owning his Rolls Royce and the financial security it represents. Now, let me ask you about that. Here's a guy who could have saved the life of this unknown child, but chose instead to save his car. Big deal. As Peter Singer points out in the next sentence, Bob's conduct, most of us will immediately respond, was gravely wrong. I think that's right. I don't think there's anybody, given the choice, who would not have steered that train to destroy the car, and the heck with it, you save somebody's life. But Peter Singer now takes us up and draws on it, and he says, on the other hand, just buying the Rolls Royce, just owning that Rolls Royce was just as wrong, morally wrong for Bob as his decision to save it and kill the child, because the $200,000 that he poured into that Rolls Royce should have gone to fund poor people all over the world, because Peter Singer argues, and I think he may argue on this show, that it's morally wrong for Americans to live this rich, pampered life we have, while there are about 1.5 billion people in the world who live on less than $2 a day, who go to bed hungry, and they don't have even clothes, much less cars and Rolls Royces. Anyway, Peter Singer, a professor at Princeton University, is an Australian who moved to Princeton, to the United States about 5 years ago to take this job at Princeton. will be our guest on the 1 o'clock show. He'll be talking about his book about the ethics, the moral dimensions of George Bush's decision-making. But he's also going to talk to us in general about his concept of an ethical life. I think it's fair to say that most of us want to deal ethically with our fellow man. I think most of us, given a dilemma, really would like to feel that we figured out the morally correct thing to do. Do you feel that way? Or do you think the moral thing to do is look out for number one and let everybody else fare for themselves? You can give us a call now, 303-382-1150. You'll get an uninformed opinion from me, but I'd like to hear yours. If you call at 1 o'clock, you can talk to Professor Singer, Peter Singer, who I think fairly can be called the most influential philosopher, the most influential ethicist in the world at the moment. And he will be on our show talking about moral dilemmas. Then in the third hour of the show today, we're going to talk about kind of a personal moral dilemma that we're all going to face. Maybe some of you have already done it. I haven't. Tomorrow around 10 or midnight, and that is filing the income tax return. There are a lot of ethical questions and moral questions involved in filing an income tax return. I mean, if you have to, the IRS says that their audits show that one of the most common, shall we say, lies, one of the most common exaggerations that people make in filling out their tax return is overstating the number of miles they drove their car for business or the number of miles they drove their car to help a charity, because you can write off those expenses based, and the more miles you drove, the better. And the IRS says when they actually do audits of this, they find many, many people, maybe most people, seriously overstate the number of miles. And it's an interesting moral question. We're all Americans. Our own good is totally tied up with the success of our country. Is it really morally right to cheat the government out of money that we legally owe them? If you don't like the tax code, if you don't think you should have to pay any tax, well, you can try to pass a law saying so. You'd then have to build your own highways and fund your own fire stations. But if as long as we have a democratic system that created this tax code, don't we have a moral obligation to pay? And when you put the check in the mail, I tend to always file about 11:45 on April 15th. Myself, the reason is I usually don't have a refund coming, and I don't see the sense of lending the U.S. government my money. I give them the money when it's due and no sooner. But when I do ride my bike or take my car down to the post office and file at 11:45 on April 15th, you know, I feel pretty good. I try very hard to fill out that tax return honestly. I don't overstate the miles. What does it save you, $50 or something, and you know that you cheated? I think I'd rather pay the extra $50 or $100 or $200 and have the feeling that I did it honestly. There may be people who, certainly there are people who feel the government is wasting that money. They're pouring that money into zillions of consultants and deputy undersecretaries to the deputy undersecretary and stuff like that, and fancy trips around the world. That government officials take at our expense, and therefore they should minimize their tax. They don't have an obligation to pay every penny. If you feel that way, or if you agree with me that you ought to pay every dime, give us a call at 303-382-1150. The other interesting moral question, I think, about income tax is whether you ought to pay more. Are you obliged to pay any more than the law allows? Well, I would say no. There was a great federal judge named Learned Hand. If you think about it, it's a perfect name for a federal judge. And Learned Hand famously said in a tax case where the government couldn't quite prove that the taxpayer had ducked the law, but said he was constantly shading. And Learned Hand said, no man is required to pay a penny more tax than the law requires. And I think that's perfectly right, morally and legally. Pay what you owe. Don't cheat the government to save yourself $50, but you don't have to pay them any more than you need to. That's our view anyway. This is T.R. Reid on AM 1150 KNRC filling in for Enid Goldstein.
Across Denver and the Front Range, more and more of you are choosing AM 1150 KNRC as Denver's premier talk station. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
Mr. Goodwrench, who is this one and only GM expert? I'm about to find out.
GM Goodwrench, may I help you?
Yeah, hi. Question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Goodwrench had over 1 million hours of training last year?
That's right.
Well, there happens to be only 8,760 hours in a year, Missy.
Excuse me?
Throws a little wrench into this whole Mr. Goodwrench thing over there, doesn't it?
Huh?
You like that? Wrench? It's a play on Goodwrench. I just made that up.
Find Mr. Goodwrench, the one and only GM expert at over 7,000 GM dealers.
Shopping for a mortgage should be no different from shopping for any big-ticket item, a car, a refrigerator, a house. You're looking for the best possible value available. Investment Property Funding Incorporated offers just that. The best mortgage rates available, starting at 1.25% for primary residences and just 1.65% for investment properties, with no points, no junk fees, and no surprises at closing. Increase your cash flow by hundreds, if not thousands of dollars per month. Investment Property Funding can handle all your mortgage needs with your choice of fixed rate, adjustable rate, or interest-only programs. They have a full menu of options for savvy, no-nonsense borrowers like you. Don't wait. Get the rates you deserve today by calling the professionals at Investment Property Funding Incorporated at 303-531-8508. That's 303-531-8508. Your mortgage experts, 303-531-8508, or online at ipfunding.com.
Libs lover.
True love is the greatest thing in the world.
Conservatives hater.
Ignoramus.
We have absolutely nothing in common.
And we all know her. Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
Tune in Saturday mornings from 10 to noon for Style Matters, sponsored locally by Denver Skin Aesthetics. Denver skincare experts offering Botox and Restylane. Style Matters entertains you each week with the latest in fashion and style. Hosted by Judy Schwartz and Evelinda Ehrman of the Style Matters column in the Rocky Mountain News. Listen to Style Matters each Saturday from 10 to noon, sponsored by Denver Skin Aesthetics. Denver skincare experts.
I'm Sue Herrera, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are lower at this hour. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is trading down about 23.5 points. The NASDAQ is off 6.3. You are paying more for everything, from airfares to apparel, from pork to poultry to petrol at the pump. That's according to the March Consumer Price Index, the government's most closely watched barometer of inflation. The higher-than-expected numbers are sparking speculation that the Federal Reserve might soon raise interest rates. DuPont today raising its quarterly earnings forecast. The number two U.S. chemical producer reports improving results in most of its businesses as the economy continues to rebound. Tenet Healthcare, one of the nation's biggest hospital operators, says it is the subject of two new federal inquiries. Tenet is already under investigation for how it billed Medicare. One of the new probes also relates to billing practices. Honda recalling 600,000 minivans and SUVs in the U.S. and Canada. The automaker says the transmissions can fail in certain Odyssey minivans. Sue Herrera, CNBC Business Radio.
Get the good stuff.
Did you know that dirt and grime can add years to your car's appearance? So stop by your nearest Napa Auto Parts store and stock up on 64-ounce Blue Coral High Gloss Car Wash or 32-ounce Westley's Bleach White Tire Cleaner for just $2.99 each. This is the good stuff. Keep your car looking its best. Pick up some Westley's Bleach White Tire Cleaner or Blue Coral High Gloss Car Wash for just $2.99 today.
Get the good stuff.
Napa, get the good stuff.
I'm David Collins, owner of Scout Productions, the small business behind Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. You know, our talent search for the Fab Five was no simple task, but at least financing it was. We actually covered our travel expenses using the membership rewards points we had earned on our American Express business cards.
With Open the Small Business Network, David Collins has the tools to make big things happen. Find out how at open.americanexpress.com.
Enrollment in the membership rewards program required. Fees and terms may vary. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
The stage is set.
Real action is what we need.
Decision 2004.
If you're in a period of transition, you must help people make that transition.
Continuing coverage.
The clock is ticking.
This should be an interesting debate.
From your best choice for the info regarding the election in 2004. AM 1150, KNRC. Now, filling in for Enid, here is Washington Post Bureau Chief T.R. Reid.
Yeah, how about that? They didn't Mount Enid this time. Yes, that's right. It is T.R. Reid, and I'm filling in for Enid today, to your misfortune. But fortunately, the show's going to get better. You're not stuck with me the whole time. As I said earlier, at 1 o'clock, we're going to have Professor Peter Singer, probably the world's leading expert on personal and global ethics, is going to be on our show for an hour. One of the questions that Peter Singer tries to deal with, and I would like to hear how you feel about it, frankly. You can give us a call at 303-382-1150. One of the questions he tries to deal with is, why should you do the right thing? Why should you do the right thing? Let's say, for example, that you find a wallet on the street, and it's got $4,000 in it in cash, $4,000, and it has a person's name in there. Should you take it and, you know, turn the wallet over to the police, and you want to keep this wallet? Well, you know, if this is a single parent taking the mortgage payment down to the bank or something to save the house, I don't think I want that $4,000. But suppose I found Bill Gates's wallet or Philip Anschutz's wallet, and it had $4,000 in it. Okay, I'll mail him back the wallet with his credit cards and the pictures of his kids, but he's never going to miss that $4,000. It's a hiccup to him. Would it be wrong for me to pocket that money? After all, I found it. I think we can all feel that the right thing to do is to return the money. You don't deserve that windfall, and whoever it is, whether it's some single mother needs to struggling to pay the mortgage or whether it's Bill Gates, they don't deserve to lose just because of an accident that anybody could make. But on the other hand, $4,000, you could do a lot with it. You pay some bills. Should you keep that money? Do you have to do the right thing? Nobody's going to know. Bill Gates isn't going to miss $4,000. I think something in me would make me send Bill Gates back his money. I'd probably feel like a sucker for it, but I think I'd do it. But what do you feel? Should you do the right thing, even if it makes no difference? Does it matter if you do the wrong thing, if it doesn't really hurt anybody? It's an interesting question. We have a caller on the line, and, of course, I don't know how to work this machine. Yeah, I do. It's Till calling on President Bush. Let's see if I can get this call. Did I push the right button?
Yes, you did.
Hi, Bill. Thanks.
Hi.
Sorry I kept you waiting. Fine, thank you.
First of all, I want to compliment you. You're one of the best reporters that the Post has. Your coverage... when you were in Japan was exquisite, and also your commentaries on NPR.
Well, you're a discerning reader and listener. I thank you. I'd say you're one of the brightest readers the Post has. How about that? Thank
well,
you.
Well, considering the president doesn't read newspapers.
So he says, actually, I have actually seen the president's Daily News Digest, which is about 60 pages, and it's a series of stories either Xeroxed or printed off the web from the Washington Post, the New York Times, USA Today, and the Houston and Dallas papers. I think he reads them.
Well, let's hope so.
It doesn't
appear so after watching his performance last night.
So what'd you think, Bill?
Well, he attempted to obfuscate a lot of stuff. He did not address, I think, a single question directly.
I noticed that, yeah.
I think he had hoped that his 18 or 20-minute presentation at the beginning would have put everybody to sleep, so no one could ask any questions. But it's frightening to see two things. Number one, his inability, and this administration's generally inability, from Condoleezza Rice up, to accept any responsibility for any of the actions taken by this administration. Rightly or wrongly,
yes.
And secondarily, I think the issue of the most essential question is, and I was absolutely flabbergasted, was who are we going to hand Iraq over to after June 30th?
Yes.
And clearly, I mean, there was no answer.
There's
no
answer
at all.
Yes, that's right.
And I think the pass on of every issue. That was complicated or required a scintilla of intellectual prowess was passed on to someone else. So that's the FBI's problem. That's somebody else's problem. That's the UN's problem.
And you know, that is a habit in this administration. They've been blaming the recession on President Clinton. yeah, they do tend, when President Bush was asked about that mission accomplished sign on the aircraft carrier, he said, well, the sailors put that up.
Yeah, right.
Which we now know is not true. The White House now concedes that they did it. But, yeah, that, do you find that bothersome, this need to pass the buck?
Well, particularly when the essence of his entire theme, the thematic essence of his presentation was that we're at war, and war requires life and death decisions, and he apparently doesn't want to make any effort to make those decisions.
Well, but no, you got to be fair to him. He's made the decision. You could argue that he didn't articulate the reasons for it, but he says he's very firm on his decision.
Yeah.
I think, you know, what do you think about this bill? My sense is that the kind of blue states, the Bush people, loved that press conference. He said exactly what they wanted to hear, and the people mm-hmm. who don't like him heard exactly what they don't like about him, and it probably didn't change a thing. What do you think?
Well, I think in terms of his supporters and detractors, I would agree with that. But I think those people that are going to really make the difference in the elections are the ones that I think we're watching this with intensity, and I think that's going to be the factor in the election.
You know, Bill, after the news break, we're going to take a minute. I'm going to ask people to tell me what questions they would have asked had they been in the press conference and had the chance to ask a question. I think a lot of obvious questions were missed yesterday. What question do you think should have been asked that you didn't hear?
Well, I think the one that I would have asked would be why was this administration so prone to go to war without any support from the United Nations, and in fact that they looked at the United Nations and also the NATO countries as scum. Why now are we reaching out for their help?
Yeah, now, could I just say, Bill, that's an argument. I hear your point, but it's not really a question.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about are questions that maybe he could have answered to provide more information. I agree with you. He didn't convey a lot of information. But I think part of that was three reporters asked him, what mistakes have you made? I don't think a president's ever going to answer that question.
No, I would agree.
I've never heard a president answer that question. And, you know,
it's kind of like, when did you stop beating your wife?
Yeah, exactly. I think the answer he eventually hit on the third try, well, the voters will decide if I made any mistakes. That's the right answer for a president to make. Of course, he made mistakes, and I would hope that he knows that. But he's not going to answer it. I was a little disappointed at the reporters. They liked that question because they think it puts them on the spot. You know, the reporters feel guilty about this notion that they're too deferential to the president.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, once at a press conference, I asked the first George Bush what I thought was a fantastic question. You want to hear this?
Sure.
The question was, do you think we ought to put Elvis Presley on a stamp? And to all of my fellow reporters thought this was a great question because we like to put the guy on the spot. So if Bush said, no, we don't want Elvis on a stamp, well, then he's an old fuddy-duddy. That's no good. If he says, yes, put Elvis on a stamp, then he's endorsing federal honors for a known drug abuser.
Right.
I thought I really had him on the spot. And you know what? George Bush trumped me. He came up with a brilliant answer. You know what it was?
No.
He said, I think under the law, you've got to be dead before they put you on the stamp, and people see Elvis walking around all the time. So it's a premature. Now, that's a pretty good answer. You've got to give him that.
Yeah.
Bill, thanks so much for calling.
Sure.
I've got to take a break here on KNRC, but we'll talk to you again.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. I know we have some other callers. A couple of things we want to talk about after the news. What ethical queries do you have for Professor Peter Singer? But the other question is, what question do you think should have been asked of President Bush at the press conference last night that wasn't asked? I personally have a long list. I don't think the reporters did a very good job. They don't get many chances at Bush, so you can give them a break there. But I have a list, but we'd like to hear from you. What questions do you think President Bush should have been asked last night that he wasn't? It's now, 12:35 in Denver, and we're going to take a break here on KNRC for news with Tim LaBacco.
Thanks, DR. Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 71 degrees. Watering restrictions are on the way for Denver water customers. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic with Steve Smith at the KNRC Traffic Center.
Still working on that light rail train accident, 9th Street and Colfax. They're on the south side of the Auraria campus. A car was pinned up against the pole. It sounds like they're making some progress there, but still a good area to avoid. East and westbound Colfax approaching the Auraria campus. Happily, nobody injured in that accident. 83rd and Federal, Westminster Police cleaning up an injury accident there. Minor accident on the southern end of Capitol Hill, westbound Alameda at Sherman. Quest Choice Long Distance for Business. Just 5 cents a minute with a $20 monthly cap and no contracts. Call 1-888-LD-QUEST for more information. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
The Denver Water Board has announced their drought response scheme for the year. The restrictions take effect May 1st and allow people to water their lawns 2 days a week. You'll be able to water an unlimited number of zones for 15 minutes per zone. No watering, though, between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. This report brought to you by Vista Ridge. Closing arguments expected today in the murder case of Michael Blagg, meaning the jury could get the trial later this afternoon or tomorrow. Blagg is accused of murdering his ex-wife, Jennifer. Her body was found 7 months after she and the couple's six-month-old daughter disappeared. The girl has never been found and is presumed dead. A Denver grand jury is reviewing the evidence that's been compiled against an accused serial killer. Richard Paul White has told police that he killed 5 women. The bodies of 2 women were unearthed from the backyard of a house that White once lived in. Vista Ridge, a great new family community, now offers everything from condominiums to single-family to custom homes. Just 20 minutes north of downtown, on the web at vistaridge.net. Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is up next. KNRC News Time is 12:37.
AM 1150 KNRC, the way Denver spells talk radio. KNRC.
Heaven, I'm in heaven.
Hi, Judy Schwartz and Evelyn DeErman here.
We co-host Style Matters Live. We love Colorado Mills Mall in Lakewood.
It's hard to resist their huge selection of outlet and retail stores, and the prices are too good to be true. And Colorado Mills has great entertainment and dining on the street.
There's something for everyone. Fashionistas, enjoy Neiman Marcus Last Call Clearance Center. Homeowners love Mikasa and Nambe. Need basics? Don't miss Casual Corner, New York Cargo Leather, and Off-Broadway Shoe Warehouse.
Your husband can shop, guard sports, teenagers dig Charlotte Musin's Skechers USA. Toddlers delight in the Upsprouts play area.
We'll broadcast our Style Matters live show at Colorado Mills Saturday, April 24th, 10 to noon. We'll be giving away lots of prizes.
What do you mean we have to work that day? I thought we could shop.
I'm telling you now on the air so you wouldn't yell at me.
A short 15-minute drive from downtown at Colfax and Indiana Avenue. Colorado Mills, where great shopping lives. Check out coloradomills.com for store hours and great deals.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Temperatures staying above our average through the end of the work week. Our average 60 today, getting up to 75. Lots of sun, just a few clouds. Later on tonight, partly cloudy. We do have a chance of an isolated storm. Some gusty winds during the evening hours, mostly clear overnight, down to 43. Sunshine for tomorrow and 72, and just a few clouds and 73 for Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
Partly cloudy and 71 degrees now. KNRC News Time is 12:39. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Jimmy Lakey, and I'd like to tell you about Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Colorado. Nationally, they're celebrating their 100th year of service, and you can help them celebrate by making a difference. You can support Big Brothers and Big Sisters in many ways. For instance, did you know that by donating your car, you can help provide one-to-one mentoring for over 4,000 of Colorado's kids in need? These kids really need your help, and it's easy to do. Your car or truck is a great tax deduction, and Big Brothers and Big Sisters will tow your vehicle at no expense to you. Even if your car or truck can't be driven, the salvage value makes a huge difference. If you don't have a car to donate, cash is also welcome with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. They also accept most boats, RVs, trailers, and motorcycles. Big Brothers and Big Sisters has touched many people in Colorado and across the nation, and possibly someone you know personally. So join the celebration. Donate today. Call them at 303-433-3666 and tell them Jimmy Lakey told you to call. 303-433-3666. Celebrate 100 years of service. Support Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Colorado.
The thirst for knowledge is quenched here. The most entertaining talk shows in Denver.
Hear both sides.
Hear both sides on AM 1150 KNRC. filling in for Enid.
If additional forces are needed, I will send them. If additional resources are needed, we will provide them.
Here is Washington Post Bureau Chief T.R. Reid.
Hello, Colorado. Yes, it is T.R. Reid, and we've been asking people what question they thought should have been asked of President Bush at last night's press conference. I think John in Westminster has a question, if I can just find John. John, is that you?
Yeah, I'm here.
I did it, yes.
Hey, thanks.
You got a question? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, since the first energy crisis in 1973, I've heard every president in their inaugural address tell American people that we need to be independent of foreign oil. In fact, George Bush, 43, said it. And he specifically talked about developing a hydrogen distribution system in it with over a 15-year period.
Yeah.
And you know what? Since that happened, since his speech, nobody's ever talked about it. And I would have asked him, where are we on that plan?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. Or if you want to broaden it just a little, John, you could say to him, he promised that his energy plan would increase oil supplies and bring gas prices down, and they're now the highest in history. What happened?
That's exactly right. But,
yeah.
You know, I'm more concerned about the becoming independent of foreign oil. And, you know, by developing an energy system, our environment is better off even.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, yes.
With all buying foreign oil, I don't know who they'd sell it to.
This hydrogen system...
They have no authority over us or any power over us.
Could you adopt hydrogen to run cars, too, or is it for state?
Oh, no, I'm talking about cars. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, I mean, that's what he talked about. He talked about having a hydrogen distribution system throughout the United States so that people could fuel their cars.
And is this hydrogen is in a gaseous form, or do you have to liquefy it?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's a plan. Since 1973, we've been talking about it.
Is that right?
Hydrogen fuel cells and all that. So, I mean, where are we? I mean, how many presidents have we gone through in all those years? That's 30 years now. And nothing's done, and we're still as dependent on foreign oil today as we were back then.
Yeah, and not only that, but we arguably went to war for the good of our allies in the Mideast, and they're raising oil prices on us. That's a nice way to thank us.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, without that hanging over our head, I mean, the foreign oil companies, OPEC, you know, Saudi Arabia, all of them, they have power over us. And
of course
that
gives them power.
Yes. They don't have any power at all.
Yeah. Okay, John, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for letting me talk.
Thank you. Good. Bye. I think Gary has a question for President Bush.
Hi, T.R.
Hi, Gary. What'd you think of the press conference?
I thought he was stumbling and bumbling. He basically was not well-schooled, and he's very slow on his feet. But other than that...
But he was confident, and he was certain about where he wants to go. Would you say that?
I would say he was confident and certain where he wants to go when it's typed in front of him and he's reading off a teleprompter.
You're tough. You're tough, Gary.
Okay. It's a two-part question.
All right, let me have
it.
Okay,
the first question I'd ask him is, Mr. Bush, last 2 weeks, since April 1st, we've had the highest casualties, 83 dead, and over 550 of our young men and women wounded or killed in Iraq. What have you learned from that experience, and what are you going to? What can you tell the parents of and loved ones of the our people in Iraq that you're going to do differently to minimize casualties and to get the situation under control?
Yeah, that's a good question. What are you going to change? Things are not going well. Shouldn't we change?
And the second question would be, since we believe in a free Iraq and we believe in democracy and freedom of speech, do you think it was a wise idea to shut down their newspaper and to not let them have ideas of their own?
Yes, I really like that question. Of course, I'm a newspaper man, but it seriously bothers me that the United States, in a war fought in the name of democracy, would shut down a newspaper. And do you, Gary, do you know the headline that led to that newspaper being shut down?
No, I don't. I would be glad to find out.
I do. The headline that prompted Bremer to shut down the newspaper, this was, of course, Sadr's newspaper, was Bremer brings back waves of Saddam. Well, okay, it's a nasty thing to say, but it's a legitimate line of comment. I mean, a lot of Iraqis are saying things are worse today than they were under Saddam.
And under the old Soviet Union, that got you put in prison, which, you know, I think, you know, if we look at it realistically, right now our occupation is a little bit like the old Soviet Union when we start doing things like that.
Yeah, it seriously bothers me that the United States of America would shut down a newspaper because we don't like the views there, and that's...
And here's the thing, isn't democracy a freedom of ideas, a freedom of thought, a dialogue, not a diatribe, where the best ideas always win out and the dumb ideas go by the wayside?
Yes, exactly. The way you find, you have the marketplace of free ideas and the best come to the fore. That's clearly the way to govern. The way to govern is not to impose ideas from the top.
And you know what the funny thing is here, TR, in this country?
Yeah.
The right wing is trying to do the same thing for all of us who disagree with the policies of the president, trying to call us unpatriotic, that we don't love our country, that we don't believe in democracy, and we don't believe in all these things. They're trying to paint us with that broad brush. So it's almost ironic that the right wing in this country is doing the same thing that we're doing to the Iraqi people.
Yeah, I know. I hear you, except, of course, they have the right to say you're unpatriotic. They have that right, and Satter had the right to say Paul Bremer is a dictator. He has that. He might be wrong, but he has the right to say it. I'll tell you an interesting thing. There was a brilliant story in a great newspaper, The Washington Post, by Anthony Shadid, my colleague who just won the Pulitzer Prize for his coverage of Iraq. And he said that shutting down that newspaper was the step that prompted Sadr to start the uprising.
Absolutely.
That is, it wasn't just a symbol of the United States opposing democracy. It practically cost us the lives of many American soldiers because it outraged the Shiites so much.
And George Will, a noted conservative, said that was the dumbest move we've made since we've been in Iraq.
Yes.
And it was totally contradictory to everything the administration had said about giving the Iraqi people their country back.
I think any real, you know, genuine conservative would criticize big government for shutting down a newspaper because it didn't like its views. I think that's a standard, classic conservative position that the government can't do that. I have to say, sadly, the Wall Street Journal editorial page supported the Bush administration for shutting down a newspaper. To me, that seems completely wrong. Gary, I got a lot of other callers. Thanks so much for calling. Yeah. If I can figure this out. Kevin has a question for President Bush. Hi, Kevin.
Yes, hi, TR.
Yeah.
My question would have been, considering that you said war was the last resort, why did you reposition thousands of special forces that were in Afghanistan who were pursuing Osama bin Laden to move them to Iraq to prepare for war 6 months ahead of time?
Yeah, I think that's a telling question. And that also gets at the suggestion, which has been widely made, that the war in Iraq may be a distraction from the war on terrorism.
True.
And pulling thousands of soldiers out of Afghanistan is sort of vivid evidence of that.
Right.
I do want to say, if I were the president, I would have answered it this way. Well, because of my brilliant diplomacy, I've gotten our European allies to send thousands of troops to Afghanistan, so we didn't need the American soldiers there. I don't know if Bush would have said that, but that's...
He's not that smart on his feet.
Yeah, but that's a legitimate answer, because I don't know if our listeners know this, but more than half the casualties in Afghanistan today, total, have been taken by European troops. American casualties are less than half, whereas in Iraq, in contrast, 90% of the casualties are ours.
Right.
So...
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Kevin, thank you.
Take care.
Dave, we got a minute here. Dave, is that you?
Yeah, hi there.
Hi. You got a question that should have been asked?
Yeah, I would like to preface the statement by saying I'm a staunch Republican, and I can criticize Republicans.
Okay.
I would ask President Bush why he continues to criticize Israel for killing radical Islamists when we did the exact same thing in Oman. We sent the Predator drone to kill those high-ranking al-Qaeda members.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. What's the difference between... and, of course, the problem is when we're fighting terrorism, particularly in Iraq, by killing people, where do we get off criticizing Israel for doing the same thing?
Absolutely. Thank you.
It's an interesting question. It would have been interesting to hear his answer. Thanks very much, Dave.
All right, bye.
Those of you who still have a question, stay on. I want to hear your questions you would have asked President Bush. But for the moment, we have to take a break. It's T.R. Reid filling in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
Looking for an alternative to Rush middays? Hear Enid Goldstein, noon to 3 on AM 1150 KNRC. Get ready for 1,000 years of unreal human behavior. They inspired such fear that 60,000 women preferred to kill themselves and face their wrath. They laid siege to cities and ransacked countries. They blackmailed empires and brought down dynasties. The Barbarians. It feels like fiction, but it's really history. The Barbarians are coming tonight at 9, 8 Central, as only the History Channel can bring you.
Hey, Walter, do you remember when we were talking a few weeks ago about the timeliness of movies?
Sure, Tom. You mean the way we can better appreciate a film when we consider how it reflects the filmmaker's focus on society?
Right. Madstone Theaters offers another great subject with this week's premiere pick, Acts of Worship. Talk about being down and out in New York City.
This film really provides a gritty, uncompromising look at drug addiction, doesn't it? Did you know that Rosemary Rodriguez, the director, used to be an addict herself? She really helps us understand the challenges that drug addicts face.
I see your point, and I especially like the glimmer of hope she leaves you with at the end, even though the characters have to go through hell to get there.
Anyone who's had to deal with drug addiction themselves or someone they care about should really see this film, but they have to hurry. Acts of Worship is showing April 16th through the 22nd only.
This is Tom DeLappa and Walter Chow inviting you to go deeper into movies with Acts of Worship this Saturday evening at 7:30. For information, visit madstonetheaters.com or call 303-752-3200.
Dendrimers are tiny artificial molecules. They're too small to see, but they can improve medication efficiency, diagnose heart attack victims, even provide for better gene therapy. Dr. Donald Tamalia founded Dendritic Nanotechnologies, the world's leading dendrimer research and manufacturing company in Michigan. Why Michigan? Because we develop ideas into world-changing technologies, starting with cars and now driving success in life sciences, advanced automotive technologies, homeland security, and dendrimers. To learn how Michigan can jumpstart your business, call 1-888-946-6829 or visit Michigan.org.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Eat to your heart's content on Thursday, April 29th. Dining Out for Life Day. More than 250 Denver Boulder area restaurants will donate 25% of food sales to Project Angel Heart, a nonprofit organization providing nutritious, home-delivered meals to people living with HIV/AIDS, cancer, and other life-threatening illnesses. To learn more about Project Angel Heart, volunteer opportunities, or the list of participating restaurants, visit www.projectangelheart.org.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Most folks will bounce around to four different vacuums in the time they could have owned just one 8-pound Oreck XL. Now, if you want to spend your money on four different vacuums, that's your business. But if you want a vacuum that protects your investment as it cleans your home, that's my business. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. And find out more about the vacuum that cleans your home, not your wallet.
Hi, it's John Rizzi, editor of Colorado Avid Golfer magazine. Do you love golf as much as I do? If so, join me and Physical Golf's Neil Walkadoff for On the Tee every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on 1150 KNRC. We'll talk about how to play, where to play, and what to play. We'll go inside the tour, across the state, and around the country, bringing in guests from the world of golf. And we'll take your calls, too, even give you a shot at winning something. So join our twosome every Saturday morning at 8 on the Tee at 1150 KNRC.
When you've got to know what's going on.
What's going on here?
All you gotta do is tune in. Tune in to AM 1150 KNRC. 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 Now, filling in for Enid.
Our only focus. Our obligation is not in temporal partisan politics. It is in producing a credible report that the American public can rely upon.
Here is Washington Post Bureau Chief T.R. Reid.
Hi, Colorado. It is T.R. Reid back. I think that was a clip we just heard from the 9/11 Investigating Commission. Look, I definitely want you all to stay by your radio today, but just in case you happen to be near a TV screen, you might want to turn on the 9/11 Commission hearings, because right at the moment, they're hearing testimony from a great American, Bobby Mueller, known to many as FBI Director Robert Mueller, but Bob was a college classmate of mine, has been a pal of mine for 40 years, Bobby Mueller, and I'm just going to announce right now that the Enid Goldstein show today is not going to say a single sour word about the FBI director. He's a great guy and a great person. Now, we've been asking the question, do you have a question that should have been asked last night at the press conference of President Bush? And I think Dave has a question. Dave, I'm sorry we kept you waiting so long.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, one thing that I am concerned about, it seems like the vast, vast majority of Iraqis want a fanatical Muslim theocracy, not freedom and democracy. Wouldn't you agree with that?
You know, I heard a political scientist at a university make that argument over the weekend. It's an interesting argument. They're authoritarians. They like to have the orders given to them. It's they're more comfortable that way. And that's allegedly part of Islamic teachings, that they want to have the rules given to them by somebody and they don't want to be bothered with making the choice. I don't know. To me, I mean, I grew up in a democracy, fortunately. It just seems like a fundamental human need to want to have the right to choose your rulers and to throw them out if you think they're wrong. What do you think?
Well, yes, but who they're going to choose are rulers who are fundamentalists. You know, just like we could change our constitution here if the vast majority voted to change it.
Yeah.
I truly believe all the Shiites are fanatical, very fanatical Muslims, probably the Kurds and most, the vast majority of the people over there. So that's what they would do if they had democracy, is they would turn it into right back to Muslim theocracy. And, you know, Saddam, you know, he's not a good guy, but he did protect other religions. He protected women's rights. He ran a secular government. And the people that he oppressed were very fanatical Muslims who wanted to take over like the Shiites do right now.
Yeah, I hear you. It's an interesting point. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Dave.
Okay.
I think Sandy in Denver has a question. Sandy, I'm sorry I kept you waiting.
That's okay. I just wanted to ask you,
yes,
what would you have done after 9/11, and why should the President of the United States have to say I'm sorry to you? That's all. I'll listen to your answer.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thank you, Sandy. Thanks for calling. The question is, why should the president have to apologize, and what would I personally have done after 9/11? I think what the president did after 9/11 was just right. If you look at what he did, he figured out that Al-Qaeda had done it. He figured out they were being defended and supported by the Taliban in Afghanistan. But then he didn't jump right into a war 3 weeks later. He spent 6 weeks building a global coalition, so that we had about 90 countries on our side, unlike this kind of paper coalition in Iraq. He built a global coalition. He got the United Nations to support the war, and then he went in and threw out the Taliban. It's exactly the right thing to do, in my view. I think he handled it just right. The question then is, why didn't he do that in Iraq? Why didn't he build a coalition in Iraq? Why didn't he rely on the rest of the world? They probably would have supported it if he'd had the patience to go back to the United Nations. I don't quite understand it, but I think right after 9/11 and the war in Afghanistan, the president handled, personally, in my view, he handled extremely well. Should he apologize? Yeah, they ought to apologize. If you look at all the stuff the FBI knew and the CIA knew, they had the name and phone number of one of the pilots and were warned that he was going to do something bad, and Tennant, the CIA director, said, well, we didn't have his first name. Yeah, they messed up, and I think they should apologize. I think Richard Clark was right to do it, and I'd like to hear somebody else in the administration do it. Anyway, we'll be back in very shortly with Professor Peter Singer. This is T.R. Reid on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC. Inglewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 1 o'clock.
NBC News Radio, I'm Bob Fall. President Bush says a new offer by Prime Minister Ariel Sharon to dismantle some Israeli settlements in Palestinian areas is a good one.
If all parties choose to embrace this moment, they can open the door to progress and put an end to one of the world's longest-running conflicts.
But Mr. Bush suggests some Israeli settlements should remain, an idea Palestinian leaders are already rejecting. Prime Minister Sharon is in Washington trying to win more U.S. support for his plan. The president has been meeting with some of his officials to talk about sending more troops to Iraq. Mr. Bush spoke by secure video link with Paul Bremer, the American in charge of rebuilding that country. The president says he'll send as many troops as needed. And where'd that come from? Parts of the South have been hit by a spring snowstorm, up to 3 inches in some areas. It's making driving a challenge. I'm Bob Fall, NBC News Radio.
Look at this one, Dad. Like new, best offer.
No, honey, that's a private owner. I'd feel better if we went to a Ford dealer for a quality check certified pre-owned Ford.
Certified?
Yep. 115 points of inspection and 6 years, 75,000-mile powertrain limited warranty coverage.
Oh, we can't get that from a private owner.
Or roadside assistance and 3.9% financing.
You're right, Dad. If it's not certified, it's just used.
Not all buyers will qualify for Ford credit financing. Take delivery from dealer stock by June 30th, 04. See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
There's a coupon for Sundown Vitamins. A dollar coupon you take right to the store. There's a coupon for Sundown Vitamins. This Sunday's paper has a coupon you'll adore. It's Sundown's Family Health Plan. Just look in the coupon section of this Sunday's paper for your dollar off coupon. Put on any Sundown Vitamins and kids' Spider-Man vitamins, too. This Sunday, April 18th. So get your coupon for Sundown Vitamins. A healthy way to save even more.
Good afternoon, partly cloudy, 72 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin, KNRC News. Denver water customers will face summer watering restrictions. I'll have that story in a moment. But let's check traffic first. Here's Steve Smith of the KNRC Traffic Center.
Denver police, other emergency folks trying to clean up an accident at 9th Street and West Colfax Avenue. It involved a light rail train and a car. The car wound up against a pole. Happily, though, nobody inside the vehicle. Still a lot of congestion in the area south of the Auraria campus. Everything else around town moving along in good shape. A reminder that the Rockies host Arizona tonight at Coors Field. Blake Street will be closed between 20th and 22nd Streets from 6 o'clock until about 11 o'clock tonight to allow those pedestrians to get in and out of the area safely. Ever get the feeling that airlines pick their fares with a dartboard? Alaska Airlines proud to announce Common Sense fares. Cheaper, simpler, fewer restrictions across the board. Visit AlaskaAir.com. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
In local news, no surprise to anyone that the Denver Water Board will implement some watering restrictions this summer. Customers will be able to water their lawn 2 days a week. KNRC's Bruce Morton has the details.
This year's restrictions take effect May 1st. They allow you to water your lawn 2 days per week, 15 minutes per zone for an unlimited number of zones. The plan prohibits watering between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. It also includes a surcharge schedule and what it refers to as courteous enforcement. Bruce Morton, Denver.
This report brought to you by Quiznos. The Michael Blagg murder trial could go to the jury as soon as late this afternoon. The Grand Junction man is accused of killing his wife, Jennifer, while his 6-year-old daughter, Abby, is missing and presumed dead. Jennifer's body was found in a landfill 7 months after she was reported missing. In his closing argument, prosecutor Frank Daniels said that in the time leading up to the alleged murder, Michael Blagg just didn't act right.
Now, we also have direct evidence in the case. The observations of witnesses at Amatech Dixon of the defendant on November 13th, the interviews of the defendant, his inconsistent statements and odd behaviors.
This afternoon, the defense is expected to present its closing argument. It claims that Jennifer Blagg's death resulted from a burglary. A Denver grand jury is looking through evidence that's been compiled against a man who has already confessed to being a serial killer. Richard Paul White has told police that he killed 5 women. The bodies of 2 women were unearthed from the backyard of a house that White once lived in. Last September, White told police he had killed the women, who he said were all prostitutes, and that he dumped the bodies in different parts of the state. White is also accused of killing a man in Aurora. That led to the investigation. investigation into the other murders. In sports tonight is Game 4 of the best-of-seven series between the Colorado Avalanche and the Dallas Stars. The Avs have a 2-1 lead going into tonight's game in Dallas. Game 5 will be at the Pepsi Center on Saturday. The Denver Nuggets take on the Spurs in San Antonio tonight in the final regular season game for the Nuggets. Nuggets have made the playoffs for the first time in 9 years and actually could wind up playing the Spurs in the first round of the playoffs. After a day off yesterday, the Colorado Rockies and Arizona Diamondbacks play tonight at Coors Field. The Rocks beat the D-backs in Monday's game. Joe Kennedy climbs the hill for the Rocks, while Elmer Descends throws for Arizona. Quiznos introduces more low-carb choices than anyone on the planet. Quiznos low-carb toasty flatbreads, the best taste, the most low-carb options, only at Quiznos Sub. Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is up next. KNRC News Time is 105.
Mother Nature. Spring cleaning. She does it according to her own schedule. Let her do her thing while we do ours. Be prepared this spring and summer with the most up-to-date weather watches and warnings exclusively on AM 1150. Denver's AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman. We're the Style Matters gals and we love to shop.
But sometimes we don't like to shop for the same things. For example, I'm sick of looking for thigh-high white boots for you.
Well, that's because you have a short attention span. But there are two boutiques where we both love to shop. Posh and the Perfect Petal at 32nd and Lowell in the Highland neighborhood.
These two boutiques are more than just gift shops. They sell almost anything your little heart desires, such as Anthony's shaving and skincare lines for men, stylish hats, the accessory for this season, dishware, and decorative home items.
How about unique floral arrangements, the hottest new skincare line called Juice, and a bridal registry, invitations, and gifts? It's all at the Perfect Petal and Posh.
Two incredible boutiques, Posh and the Perfect Petal, at Lowell and 32nd Avenue in the Highland neighborhood. Open Monday through Saturdays, 9 to 8, Sundays, 11 to 5.
We both love to shop there because they give great shopping.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. A bit more than just breezy over the next couple of days, but beautiful conditions as far as sunshine and warm temperatures are concerned. We'll top out around 77 for the high today and then drop tonight to a low of 43. Mostly sunny, 72 tomorrow, sunshine and 73 on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Partly cloudy and 72 degrees, KNRC News Time is 107. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
From AM 1150 KNRC, Denver's choice for talk. Now, one of the Mile High City's most compelling talk hosts, Enid Goldstein. The producer is Joe Anderson. Board operations, Jordan Lyles. Now, here's Enid.
Well, no, here's not Enid. It is the Enid Goldstein Show, but it's T.R. Reid today filling in for Enid, who's in California, and I get to be in sunny, beautiful Colorado filling in for Enid. As I said earlier, we have, I think, a really exciting hour of Colorado Talk Radio coming up because our guest is arguably the premier ethicist on the planet at the moment, Professor Peter Singer, who is the Ira W. DeCamp Professor of Bioethics at Princeton University's Center for Human Values, and a man who deals with the biggest cosmic questions. What is the right thing to do, and why should we do the right thing? And since we're in this ethical mode, I just want to say, in terms of full disclosure, that I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of Princeton University, and therefore in some extremely vague disconnected way, maybe you could say I have some authority over Peter Singer, but I don't really think so, and he's such a powerful person, I don't think he would care much what the Board of Trustees had to say, but we do have this connection. Now, let's see if I can push the right button and find our guest. Professor Singer, are you there?
I am there indeed.
Ah, yes. Hi, thanks. I'm so sorry we kept you waiting.
Not at all.
Thank you very much for joining us. I just want to remind our listeners that when you were appointed to this chair in bioethics at Princeton, I think your first day, there was a huge demonstration of protesters outside the gate of the university, and the New York Times said this is the biggest commotion in, that anybody can remember in American education. All that happened? This was a controversial appointment?
It was a controversial appointment, yes. I guess that's because of my views about, the right to life and euthanasia and so on. I think that was particularly what brought it out. My views about animals and ethics, obviously, are also controversial. So I think that, in fact, Princeton was brave to face down that protest, and I certainly appreciate that. I think academic freedom is tremendously important, and Princeton certainly stood firm for saying, you know, we made this appointment on the basis of academic merit, and we won't be influenced by the fact that this is someone whose views are controversial.
Yes, I think we could point out that one of my fellow trustees didn't take that position. That was Steve Forbes, who's actually a wonderful person and an excellent trustee, a great guy, but he was running for president at the time and got some heat from his conservative right-to-life supporters for voting for your appointment. And how did he respond then?
Well, he made a statement that he would not make any further gifts to Princeton University. I believe he'd been a reasonably substantial donor to the university as long as I was employed by the university. So I don't know. I presume he's kept his word, and over the last 5 years, it is nearly now, he's not made any gifts to Princeton. But
I wonder if that's true, yeah. There's certainly a lot of Forbes Halls and Forbes this and Forbes that around Princeton. So in the past, the family's given money.
The family certainly has given in the past, yes.
Now, we were talking earlier. We are definitely going to talk about your view of The President of Good and Evil, your new book from Dutton Books, and your view of President Bush's decision-making. But we were talking earlier on the show, looking forward to your coming, about somewhat bigger questions. We talked about that example you had, I think, in practical, anyway, in one of your books, about the man who parks a Rolls-Royce on the railway station and then sees that the train is going to run down a small child and fails to throw the switch so that he can save his Rolls-Royce. You remember that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was in fact, it was a Bugatti in the example.
A Bugatti, yeah.
It doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't make any difference. But I think the point that of course, we all know he was wrong to save his car at the price of this child, but I think the point you made was he was wrong to buy the car in the first place. Is that right?
Well,
that's too simple.
No, I mean, the point of the example is really this. If we say that he was wrong to save his car at the price of the child's life, then we need to switch to look at our own lives and to say, okay, here we're demanding that a man make a huge sacrifice. In the example, this is his most valuable asset,
yes,
and his pride and joy and so on, you know,
yes,
and it's not insured. So we're asking a man to make a really big sacrifice of a very substantial asset in order to save a child's life. And yet we know that we can save the lives of children in developing countries for much less than we're asking this man to give up. That is, if we send a check for maybe $200,
yes,
to UNICEF or Oxfam America or one of those other organizations that are working to help people in the third world, to help them escape poverty and to be able to live a sustainable lifestyle, we can save the children's lives because poverty kills. Children are malnourished, they get diseases, and they have no health care, and so on. So what should we think about ourselves if we're living a comfortable lifestyle, if we're dining out, if we're spending money on luxuries, including perhaps a car that's not nearly as expensive as a Bugatti? What should we think of ourselves when we are not assisting those organizations to reduce the deaths of children and adults in third world countries? That's really the question.
I hear that. Raises a question for me. How much do I know is enough? I could send them $200. I wouldn't even notice it, probably. Is that enough? I mean, if I sent 2,000 or 20,000, it might save more lives.
Yes, that's exactly the
and
problem.
And how do you make this moral...
How do you make that decision?
Yes.
Think in a way we each make it for ourselves. What I tell my students when I talk to them about this is that the first thing is to become aware of the issue, to see that there is a choice that we're making when we spend money on luxuries and our own comfort rather than sharing it with others. The second question is, how far do I personally go? And I think, you know, we make decisions where if we're aware of the issue, we'll perhaps be prepared to make some sacrifice, perhaps not as great a one as we were asking the guy with the Bugatti to make.
Mm-hmm.
I've suggested in one of my books, Practical Ethics, that the traditional tithe, that is 10% of our income, would be a good thing to do if we were to take that and write a check for that to some of these organizations. That would be a very substantial contribution. Of course, some of us could do more, but it would be a very substantial contribution that would go a long way to helping. And it would suggest perhaps a new commitment to the relief of poverty and to saving life that could spread around the affluent world. People could say, yeah, you know, if you're not giving, if you're reasonably comfortably off and you're not giving 10% of your income to the world's poorest people, you're not doing the right thing.
Let me ask you this question. You're teaching at Princeton now. Princeton is about to, I think they've broken ground, I think right across from your office, for a new science library.
Right.
Okay, they need a science library. A university needs this. But they hired Frank Gehry to build a library, a very fancy, beautiful library, for which they're going to pay $60 million. Now, is it, if you could build the library for $10 million and give away the $50, is it legitimate for a university to build a $60 million beautiful library?
If it could do that without breaking faith with its donors, I would think that would be, you know, the right thing to do would be to build the 10 million library and give the other 50 away. I guess the difference is that in this case, the alumni or whoever it is who's given the money to Princeton have given it to Princeton for the benefit of Princeton University. And while the university obviously does a great deal of good around the world, I mean, it changed its motto from Princeton in the nation service to Princeton in the nation service and the service of all nations.
Yes.
And I think that's a very desirable step. So, you know, the university does do things that are important elsewhere in the world, but if the alumni have given for the benefit of Princeton, I don't think the university can break that faith and just give that money away, no matter how worthy the cause might be. So, you know, you could say in a way, I mean, the prior question is that you should ask is, well, should alumni give money to Princeton rather than to these other causes? And
you have an answer for that one?
Look, I have to say sometimes my students ask me, and of course, you know, the seniors are about to become alumni, and it puts me in a difficult situation because I work here. I'm, you know, grateful for the wonderful facilities that Princeton provides. I think it gives an excellent education. But I do have to say, it is a well-endowed institution. It has a large endowment, and there are more urgent causes around the world. So I think that it's difficult to defend giving more money to Princeton rather than to giving to some of these issues at this stage.
You're subversive.
I guess I am.
I think deliberately.
One of the good things about academic institutions is that I think they welcome subversives in their midst.
Yes, I think that's right. Now, you spend a lot of time, and in your books you're quite meticulous about figuring out what is the right thing to do in a given circumstance. But I think the more basic question, which you also deal with, is why should we do the right thing?
Yes, that's certainly, I mean, and that's relating, of course, to this question when you're talking about giving money away. Obviously, people are not particularly keen to give money away. It's not the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, so
and,
why?
Yeah, so I think that there are a number of reasons that philosophers have suggested over the years. The one that I find, you know, is most persuasive is that we want to live a life that we can respect ourselves. We want to have some degree of self-respect. And,
that's a good answer.
You know, doing what we think of as right is a way to develop that self-respect and to feel that our life is, you know, has got some meaning and is fulfilling, that it's not just a matter of we earn more money, we therefore manage to consume more than other people, and we left behind a big pile of trash at the end, and that's the end of it.
Yeah. When I do something that I know is right, I feel good. When I do something that I know is wrong, I feel bad. How do I know what's right and wrong? Is it because I've been sitting in Mass every Sunday for the last 40 years, or is this inherent?
No, I don't think it's either of them. If you have been sitting in Mass for the last 40 years, I hope that you've also been thinking critically about what you're hearing in Mass.
Oh, I do. Yes, I do.
Rather than simply just accepting it. So yeah. I think you're using your own judgment. I think if you have some sort of gut feelings or gut instincts, and, you know, here first we're getting a little closer to the book I wrote about the president's ethics,
yes.
because I think to some extent he does judge that way. I think we ought to be reflective about that as well. I think that, you know, our gut instincts are not always the right ones. They may come from a particular upbringing or something of that sort. There may even be some biological basis to some of them through evolution. But
Yeah,
I think it's. I think there's some evidence of this. Actually, there's, in fact, there's some research going on right here at Princeton, which suggests this that people respond in certain ways to moral dilemmas when they involve, for example. Like up close personal violence, and they respond differently when the violence is just as bad, but it's in some way at a distance.
Oh,
you know, so that could be because we've evolved from living in small groups where violence always was up close and personal. We didn't have methods of harming people at a great distance, and now we do. And perhaps our instincts don't really cope with that very well.
That's interesting. Well, you've spent so much time articulating notions of good and evil. I'm going to argue, but I can't argue it right now because I've got to take a break just for a minute, pay some bills. But when we come back, I'd like you to talk about whether you're pleased that the United States has a president who's constantly focusing on concepts of good and evil. But we can't do that right now. We'll be back in just a minute with Professor Peter Singer. It's T.R. Reid filling in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now, the next generation of talk radio.
Talk with us.
Blah, 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 blah.
Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
Imagine calling the UK for 6 cents a minute or Mexico for 9 cents a minute, all from your wireless phone. Introducing enhanced discounted international dialing only from AT&T Wireless. Sign up now for $3.99 a month on qualified plans and you can call to over 30 countries at the lowest rates of any national wireless carrier. Just call 1-866-REACH-OUT or visit attwireless.com today.
Reach out on the wireless service America trusts, AT&T Wireless.
Countries and rates may change. Airtime and roaming charges and mobile surcharge may apply in addition to international calling rates, geographic limitations, special credit and billing requirements, device compatibility and other restrictions apply.
So my business partner calls me and asks if I want to play golf tomorrow. Golf? Golf? I'm in the process of buying a house. I do not have time to putt around all day.
Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage eases the home buying process by handling the whole transaction, helping you every step of the way. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. Visit ColoradoHomes.com. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is owned and operated by NRT Incorporated.
Being able to wake up every morning with Allison is kind of like having a sleepover with your best friend.
I love my husband. We have so much fun. We do everything together.
Imagine having the companionship of a best friend, the passion of true love, and a shared view of the most important things in life, all in one person. That kind of relationship would be something special, wouldn't it? Well, at eHarmony.com, these are exactly the kinds of relationships that result when couples are matched based on 29 dimensions of compatibility.
It is beyond joy to be able to come home to someone who really loves you.
Being seen and loved by that one person in the world with whom you are meant to be. At eHarmony.com, we don't think that's too much to ask for.
I cannot imagine life without Allison.
That's why if you're looking for your soulmate, check out eHarmony.com and see if it feels comfortable to you. Do it now and get your $40 personality profile free. eHarmony.com, because it shouldn't take a lifetime to find the love of your life.
Leadership. Bring it into your life now. From the people who define leadership in America today, KNRC and the Tom Peters Company present the Leadership Challenge Workshop, Tuesday, May 18th, from 8 to 4 p.m. at the Denver Marriott Southeast. It's inspirational. It's interactive. It's proactive. Go online to denverleaders.com now to learn more and register. Special prizes and group rates are available. Log on to denverleaders.com or call 303-527-0607. That's 527-0607. The Leadership Challenge Workshop, a special one-day seminar sponsored by the Denver Business Journal, First National Bank of Colorado, EKSNH Accounting Firm, and presented by the Tom Peters Company and AM 1150 KNRC.
I'm Bill Griffith, CNBC Business Radio. The markets are a bit lower on Wall Street today. We have about 40 minutes of trading left, and the Dow is down 41 points at this moment at 10,339. While the NASDAQ is down about 13 points at 2016. Inflation fears seem to be dragging the markets today. The Labor Department said this morning that consumer prices rose by 0.5% last month.
That report has fueled concerns that a long period of historically low interest rates could soon end. If inflation's going up, you'll get higher interest rates. Good news, though, from DuPont today. They're doing a little help for the Dow. The chemicals giant says it's raising its quarterly earnings outlook. DuPont earlier this week announced it would cut 3,500 jobs to combat high raw material costs. No relief at the gas pump. AAA says prices hit a new record today. The average price of regular gasoline topped off at $1.78 a gallon around the country. The Dow right now down 41 points. The NASDAQ is down 14. I'm Bill Griffith, CNBC Business Radio.
Get the good stuff.
Did you know that dirt and grime can add years to your car's appearance? So stop by your newest Napa Auto Parts store and stock up on 64-ounce Blue Coral High Gloss Car Wash or 32-ounce Westley's Bleach White Tire Cleaner for just $2.99 each. This is the good stuff. Keep your car looking its best. Pick up some Westley's Bleach White Tire Cleaner or Blue Coral High Gloss Car Wash for just $2.99 today.
Get the good stuff.
Napa. Get the good stuff.
I'm David Collins, owner of Scout Productions, the small business behind Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. You know, our talent search for the Fab Five was no simple task, but at least financing it was. We actually covered our travel expenses using the membership rewards points we had earned on our American Express business cards.
With Open the Small Business Network, David Collins has the tools to make big things happen. Find out how at open.americanexpress.com.
Enrollment in the membership rewards program required. Fees and terms may vary. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
Yo, my name's Rick, and I'm a grocery bagging technician. Jimmy Lakey and I, we used to roll together in my 71 Camaro. Then he got all into being a radio celebrity and didn't have the time for regular folks.
Remember when I shaved off your eyebrows, Lakey?
I wasn't sorry.
Jimmy Lakey, weekday mornings at 6 on AM 1150 KNIC. Now filling in for Enid, here is Washington Post Bureau Chief T.R. Reid.
Hello, Colorado. We're back, with Professor Peter Singer of Princeton University, an absolutely world-class expert on ethics, what is the right thing to do and why should we do the right thing. And he's going to talk to us about this fascinating new book he wrote about, here's a man who spent his life studying good and evil, and now he's living in the United States with a president who seems to be fixed on concepts of good and evil. Is this a good thing, Professor, that we have a president who constantly talks about what's good and what's evil?
I think it is a good thing that we have a president who talks about moral issues, because
yes,
I think we should be thinking more about moral issues, as we were talking earlier about, you know, what is the right thing to do and how to do it. I don't actually think, though, that good and evil are necessarily the best terms to have this discussion.
Title of your book, then, is you're kind of making fun of him, or...?
Not making fun of him, I guess. I mean, the president of good and evil does suggest that this is a man who talks a great deal of good and about good and evil,
yes,
and that we need to examine that. The original subtitle, I mean, the subtitle of the book is now The Ethics of George W. Bush. When I sent it into the publisher, I wanted the subtitle Taking George W. Bush Seriously. So my title...
Yes, I think that's what it is. I saw the book in Britain. Isn't that the subtitle?
That's right. In Britain,
yeah,
they decided to stick with what I wanted. Here, the publisher said, Dutton said, no, we must get ethics into the subtitle. So they changed it.
Yeah.
And I went along with that. But my point is that, you know, I don't want to make fun of the president, as a number of books that have come out recently have.
Yes.
I want to take him seriously and hold him to his standards, that is, the standards of having strongly defended moral views, and I want to ask whether those views do really stand up to examination, whether they're consistent with each other, and whether they're consistent with what the president has been doing during his 3 years in office. So, you know, in calling it the president of good and evil, I was just echoing the fact that he uses those terms a lot, actually.
Yes.
I had a research assistant go through a lot of his speeches, and she found that in about 30% of his speeches, he talks about good and evil. So that's his preferred moral language, although, as I said, it wouldn't be mine because it's so black and white. It tends to, you know, see ourselves as the good and the others as evil, and that, I think, is often simplistic and can lead into the sort of problem situations that we're seeing now in Iraq, perhaps.
Well, if he had called you and said, what kind of terminology should I use when I talk about these things, what would you have told him?
I probably would have said right and wrong. think about what we ought to do, about how we can be, you know, act well, act as good people, and try and make the world a better place. Those seem to me to be the moral language that I think is better suited to dealing with the complicated world in which we live.
Which of the president's major decisions do you look at in the book?
Oh, a whole range of them. I mean, I start off with his decision about a tax cut, and yes. I ask whether, firstly, that was in itself ethically required, as he argued in some places. Secondly, whether it's compatible with compassionate conservatism.
Yes.
One of his major...
Oh, you are taking him seriously.
Oh, indeed, yes, yes.
I think a lot of Americans, maybe we're too cynical, would say, oh, that was a slogan to get him elected.
Well, I mean, yes, some Americans may say that, but I want to say, look, he talked a lot about this. Let's assume that he believes in it. But is it consistent with reducing the revenues of the government so that it perhaps can not respond to poverty in the way that the president said in many of his speeches he wished to respond? Or, you know, he didn't say he wished the government to respond. He said he wished faith-based organizations to respond. But, of course, the faith-based organizations need assistance. They're too small. They don't have the revenues.
Mm-hmm.
So they need assistance. And I think by campaigning for such a large tax cut and bringing it through Congress and then indeed getting a second one and cutting the estate tax as well, I think he has drastically restricted the ability of government to help the non-government sector to really make the society a more compassionate one.
I know you deal with this argument, but he would say, well, what I've really done is given the money back excuse me, to the taxpayers so that they on their own can make contributions or help needy organizations.
Well, but he doesn't give them any incentives to do so, right? The sort of tax deduction is actually reduced by what he's done for many people.
Of course, yes.
And I think that, you know, Americans are not so unselfish that a large number of them are going to give to these organizations. I wish it were otherwise, but I don't think, you know, I think if you go around and ask those organizations themselves, have they experienced a big increase? Have these checks that have gone out in the mail gone to organizations helping our poorest people? I think the answer overwhelmingly would be no, they have not in a substantial way gone there.
Yes. Do you think there was a way, would have been a more moral way to cut taxes, or was just the basic process, the basic idea was wrong?
I don't think we needed a tax cut that of which you know, the largest amount of revenue lost was revenue that now will go to some of the richest people in the country.
Yes.
I think that if there was a case for a tax cut, it was for the middle class and lower income earners. I also strongly feel that we did not need a reduction in the estate tax.
Yes, that one really bugs me. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there is this rhetoric that the president has used about a death tax and about taxing people twice, but really the estate tax is a tax on the heirs of someone who
yes.
would inherit money.
Yes.
It only taxes the largest estates, those of around $5 million or more.
Yes.
So, you know, the idea that it's destroying the small family farm is a myth, and no one has been able to come up with
They've never
figures.
Come up with the small farmer business.
That's right. Yeah. It's been put out of business by
yeah.
the estate tax.
Yes.
And I think if we believe in equality of opportunity, it's reasonable to say that people should not get very large inheritances. You know, Warren Buffett, who is you know, perhaps the richest or second richest man in the country, has referred to people getting large inheritances as having a lifetime worth of welfare stamps for coming out of the right womb.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think, you know, if we believe that welfare stamps destroy incentive, then surely we must believe that receiving a huge inheritance when you're a child, or knowing that as a child that you'll get a huge inheritance, must also destroy people's incentive.
I want to ask you another aspect of the inheritance tax. Does it make sense to you as an ethicist that we should tax more something that people didn't work to earn, that they just kind of lucked into, and tax less something that you have to work to earn?
I think that makes sense.
Make an argument for you?
Yeah, I think we want to provide incentives for people to work and employment. And I think that's important. I think that raises another issue, that is that we didn't cut payroll tax, and payroll tax is really a tax on employment. So if we want to encourage employment, Perhaps that was a good thing to reduce, rather than as I say, income tax, particularly for those who are already earning a very large amount.
And what you're saying is that the tax cuts, just de facto, and the nature of them doesn't comport with the rhetoric of compassionate conservatism.
That's right. Yes, that's right. With, for example, creating a single nation of justice and opportunity. Those were the president's words in his inaugural address. And I don't think that he has lived up to that. So that's one of the domestic issues that I talk about. I also talk about issues relating to freedom and the role of religion in the state, and issues about protecting the culture of life, relating to the use of embryos in research. And then, of course, I talk about some of the global issues, starting with things like global warming, the president's refusal to sign the Kyoto Protocol, and then go on to the issues relating to the war on terror, the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, the attitude to the United Nations that was shown by the refusal to abide by the views of the majority of the Security Council in regard to the war in Iraq.
We definitely want to get into that, particularly the issues about the wars. We're going to take a break just now for news, but Professor Singer, please hang on a couple of minutes. We'll come back to you. It's T.R. Reid on KNRC AM 1150, and we're going to hear news now from Tim McLaughlin.
Thanks, T.R. Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 72 degrees. A Grand Junction jury could get a murder case this afternoon. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic with Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Southbound I-25, very heavy from Mobile Washington Street on south through Colorado Boulevard. Reason is a minor collision. Thankfully, nobody hurt. It's going to take a while for that jam to loosen up. Everything else around town looking good as far as the freeways are concerned. Alameda and Abilene and Aurora, minor collision. Still a little slowing around 9th Street and Colfax after an earlier accident involving a light rail train. A night of title fights live on in-demand pay-per-view Saturday features Chris Bird and Andrew Galata, John Ruiz and Frez Okendo, and more. Call Comcast Cable at 303-930-2000 to order now. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
By late this afternoon, the jury in the Michael Blagg murder trial could be deliberating, closing arguments being heard this afternoon with prosecutors saying that Blagg murdered his wife, the defense claiming the woman's death resulted from a burglary. This report brought to you by Quest. Denver water customers will be restricted to twice-a-week watering starting May 1st. The Denver Water Board announced the restrictions today. The utility's customers will be able to water an unlimited number of zones for 15 minutes per zone, but no watering allowed between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. The Denver Regional Council of Governments Transportation Committee has given its approval to a report that says RTD's Fast Tracks proposal is a good, financially sound project. The proposal for the $4.7 billion project still has to make it through the entire Dr. Cog board on April 21st. For choice and flexibility, get Quest Choice home, phone, and long distance. More features and 5 cents a minute of long distance make Quest the choice for Colorado. 888-273-9221 or quest.com. Restrictions apply. Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is up next. KNRC News Time is 1:37.
When you need to know
information,
you never have to wait.
Now.
Talk and information 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Information now.
Hear both sides on AM 1150 KNRC.
Crizal Alice A? Sounds romantic. It's the latest in lens treatments. Your plastic lenses will not scratch and are glare proof. Hi, I'm Bea Verullo, owner of International Optique. For night driving, computers, movie theaters, and more, ask for Crizal Alice A. The difference is bright lights and blur or clarity. You choose. When trusting International Optique at Tamarack Square or International Optique at University in Orchard, you will always find the latest in lens technology and one of the largest selections of eyewear in Denver. We are so excited to be celebrating our 9th anniversary. Call to set your annual eye exam with Dr. Sogel Kelly and select that perfect new frame and lenses. Reach for any of our star frames and pay $44 when you purchase prescription lenses. And don't forget to ask for Crizal Alize. Seeing is a wonderful gift. It's time to see International Optique at Tamarack Square or International Optique at University in Orchard to help select a fabulous frame and new lenses. See you soon.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Nothing to complain about as far as the amount of sunshine and the warm temperatures are concerned, but it is going to stay a little more than just breezy for the next couple of days. Winds out of the southwest this afternoon at 10 to 20 miles an hour with a high of 77. Overnight low tonight of 43. Breezy 72 tomorrow, and it'll still be breezy and in the low 70s on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
72 degrees under partly cloudy skies. KNRC News Time is 1:39. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Shopping for a mortgage should be no different from shopping for any big-ticket item, a car, a refrigerator, a house. You're looking for the best possible value available. Investment Property Funding Incorporated offers just that. The best mortgage rates available, starting at 1.25% for primary residences and just 1.65% for investment properties, with no points, no junk fees, and no surprises at closing. Increase your cash flow by hundreds, if not thousands of dollars per month. Investment Property Funding can handle all your mortgage needs with your choice of fixed rate, adjustable rate, or interest-only programs. They have full menu of options for savvy, no-nonsense borrowers like you. Don't wait. Get the rates you deserve today by calling the professionals at Investment Property Funding Incorporated at 303-531-8508. That's 303-531-8508. Your mortgage experts, 303-531-8508, or online at ipfunding.com.
Hear one of Denver's most entertaining personalities, Doug Kellett, weekdays at 3.
It's here at last.
He's daring.
He's dashing.
He's dangerous.
He's beautiful.
He's Doug Kellett.
Doug Kellett, hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC. Now, filling in for Enid, here is Washington Post Bureau Chief T.R. Reid.
Hello, Colorado. We're back on KNRC with Professor Peter Singer, a bioethicist and the author of the new book, The President of Good and Evil, which has the subtitle in Britain, Taking George Bush Seriously. I think it's a great subtitle. And, Professor, what's the subtitle in America?
It's simply The Ethics of George W. Bush.
If I might say so, it's not as good.
I'll pass that on to Dutton.
Thank you. Yeah. We have some callers calling in to ask you questions. Do you mind if I switch to listeners here in Colorado to talk to you?
I'd like to talk to them.
Thanks. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for holding on so long.
Yeah, not a problem.
Hi. Do you have a question for Professor Singer?
Yeah, actually, the previous hour brought one more up. I had one for him, but I want to bring one up, and
Fine.
It has to do with the discussion you were having regarding the shutting down of the paper in Fallujah.
Yes.
And our freedom of speech claims as a country. Personally, I can tell you my view on that is, number one, they're not America, and they're in the middle of a war. My question is, by comparison, was shutting down Nazi propaganda machines unethical? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, do you hear this question, Professor? We were talking about the government shut down that newspaper in Fallujah.
Right. Look, I think that, you know, you do have to look at the circumstances. I do agree that the freedom of speech that we enjoy in this country might not be possible either in a war situation or, in your example, in a country that perhaps has been under dictatorship for many years, and you may need to try and reverse that before you can get to a stage where people are able to really assess different views themselves. So, obviously, I haven't addressed this in my book. This is something that's happened since the book was published.
Yes.
I wouldn't, you know, without knowing a lot of the details of the situation, I wouldn't necessarily say that the same standards of freedom of expression must prevail.
I wasn't actually putting that on you. It was a discussion that was going on before you were on the
right.
Air. It was kind of bannered about that we're not holding up our own principles and ethics by neglecting their right to free speech with that paper, which was in and of itself nothing but propaganda and calling for violence on our troops.
And you had an earlier question for Professor Singer?
Yes, I did. Yeah. This is one of the bigger points of your book, I guess, and that Teal brought up, and that's the ethical question about the man who went to save his car. And my question is you, that in the financial situation, say any of us, any American, any Brit, any Australian, we have a decent car, we have a decent house, we go to movies, we do a lot of things we probably shouldn't do. If we think about the poor people in Africa or the poor people in you know, any region of the world, exactly what do you do in your personal life that would, I don't know if you're just posing the question or if you actually live this. Do you see what I'm saying? I don't know.
Yeah, it's
a good question.
It's an absolutely fair question.
Like the amount of money you would make on this book.
Right. What's the answer, Professor?
Right. Well, I said when we were talking about this that I thought people aiming for 10% for a tithe of their gross income was a good standard. In fact, I started doing this about 30 years ago, and for the last 30 years, I've been giving at least 10% of my gross income to organizations like Oxfam, which is an international organization, although Oxfam America is the one I'm giving to right now. I've actually increased it because, you know, Princeton pays me quite a decent salary, and I can manage to give more than 10%, so I'm now giving probably more like 20%. But
I don't want to get too far into how much you make or what you give. I mean, it's obviously commendable that you give money. My question is that obviously I don't own a Rolls Royce, I don't fly on Learjets, I don't do any of those things. But is it ethical for anyone to? I mean, say you make $100 million a year and you give 90 million of it away, but you still have 10 million. Is it still ethical to have a Maserati?
Look, I think it would be more ethical if you, you know, just had a regular car, maybe a Honda Prius or something like that. So you were being good to the environment as well.
Correct.
And didn't do that. But, you know, if someone earns 100 million and is giving 90 million away, I'm not going to be the first to throw a stone at them. I think they're doing a good job.
I'm trying to look at the situation in its absolute end, which would be that anybody who would have that Maserati or that Rolls Royce, regardless of how much they give away, they still could do more.
They could still do more.
And I don't believe in that personally. That's not what I'm advocating, but I'm just asking that on that level, is that the end that you would get to?
That would be correct, yes.
Okay. Right.
Jeff, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Professor, we have a call from Lucy here in Colorado. Lucy, you have a question for...
Well, really, it's more of a comment.
All right, let's have it.
I can't even figure out a way to pose this in a question to pretend like I would...
That's fine. Just comment, then. That's fair.
Basically, I just listened to what the professor said about the inheritance tax, that somehow the government has some right to it, and that because this is a free country... In other words, where you can have opportunities, an equal opportunity country, that it should be, everybody should be equalized and start over with each generation. I mean, I didn't receive a penny from my family, and I make a very good living, but I intend upon leaving money to my children, and the reason I can do that is because it's an equal opportunity country. And I don't think the government is entitled to any of it. They can give it to other people that haven't worked so hard in this equal opportunity environment.
Let's hear the answer to that, Professor.
Okay, first, I totally respect your desire to leave some financial security to your children, but, you know, the estate tax that we're talking about, as I say, really cuts in with large estates where you're giving, you know, $5 million or more. Secondly, this idea that it's my money and that the government doesn't have any kind of right to it, which is what President Bush was saying when he was campaigning, I think that that's based on a myth, you know, because if there were no government, you would not have that money. If there were no government that was protecting your security, that was checking for law and order, that was ensuring that there is infrastructure. I don't know who you work for, who Lucy works for, but, you know, obviously you need transport, you need infrastructure, you need all of those things. You need a legal system.
I have no problem with the concept of paying taxes.
Okay.
And, you know, I earn quite a bit of money, and I have no problem in giving that back. I used to be military. I'm self-employed. You know, I make more than probably my mother did in 5 years, in a single year. But that's what makes this country great, and no one can look and pretend to be fair-minded and tell someone else how much of their money they need to give away in order to be ethical. I mean, I think the judgments that are being made on this program are ridiculous. This isn't fair-minded. This is just liberal ethics, the idea that in order to do something right, you need to be giving it to someone else. I mean, I choose how I give, and to throw stones at somebody because they drive a nice car, you don't know what they're doing in another direction to help a group of people. They could be employing 50,000 people. Let them fly in a Learjet. I mean, those judgments, I mean, to pretend like this is truly just analyzing it from an ethical point of view, I think this is analyzing it from a politically liberal point of view that has nothing to do with people working hard, earning their livings. I mean, no one's entitled to that money. I believe in the government. I served in the military, and I believe in paying our fair share. But to penalize someone for being successful is a ridiculous concept in this country.
Well, I'm not suggesting penalizing them beyond a certain degree, but I do think that...
Why should they be penalized at all? Why not equality? That's what our country is about.
I think that our country is about providing incentives to people who work hard, and I want that to continue. And obviously, therefore, I'm not supporting absolute equality or leveling down or anything of that sort. But I am pointing out that we are extraordinarily fortunate in this country, that we were born into a society that enables us to have lots of opportunities. And there are hundreds of millions of people in the world who do not have those opportunities through no fault of their own. They work hard too. It's not that they're lazy. They work as hard as they possibly can, but the situation that they're in makes it extremely difficult for them to escape poverty. And if we can give up some of our luxuries, like, you know, drive a regular car instead of the Maserati, I think that's a good thing to do. Now, you know,
that's not a judgment to be made by you.
Well,
or
why not? Why can't I express my opinion? It's a free country, isn't it?
Of course you can express your opinion. I'm not taking you off the air or anything. I'm just saying that's not a judgment. I need to look at someone else and say, give of your own money and I'll give of mine. But to make a judgment of someone and say they drive too nice a car, I mean, the idea that if somebody makes massive amounts of money that they somehow owe a debt to society, I mean, yes, if I'm making massive amounts of money, I'm going to give. That's the nature of who I am. But if somebody else is making massive amounts and doesn't want to, they're not unethical. They're choosing how they want to live their life.
Lucy, isn't it useful to have somebody kind of help you make ethical decisions to give you some guidelines?
In this case, I don't agree because I think it's the whole concept. He acts like he's coming from a scholarly point of view. In reality, all he's about is leveling the playing field for everyone. And that's not how it works. That's not reality. I mean, yes, that's the liberal point of view that everybody should be taken care of and handheld. I mean, I want to give my money to someone in a foreign country, no problem. You come to me as an independent, nonprofit organization, and I find your cause to be great, I'll give you money. But my government doesn't need to be doing that. My government doesn't need to be penalizing me for being overly successful and creating a level of successfulness that you can't go above unless you're going to be penalized. Let everybody be equal and true equality, and everybody will be successful. To bring down people that do well because they did too well in your standard, they're driving too nice a car, well, they could be, you know, doing miracles in other places in their lives, but they're driving a Rolls Royce. Who cares? It's their money.
Lucy, that's a very powerful point, and I'm going to ask Professor Singer to respond to it, but first we got to pay some bills. Professor Singer, please hang on the line for a few minutes. It's T.R. Reid on AM 1150 KNRC.
Flush Rush.
Anyone else has to go, do it now. I ain't stopping again.
Middays, the Rush alternative. Enid Goldstein, noon till 3 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Today's Daily Deal is free membership for a week at participating Curves locations. Look for it on the weather page in today's Denver Post. Start your day with the Daily Deal. XL Energy reminds you that late-season snowstorms can bring trees down, causing an outage. To report an outage in your area, please call 1-800-895-4999. XL Energy reminds you that along the Front Range, heavy snowstorms and late spring are common. The weight of snow and early leaves can cause tree damage, which often results in power outages. If you suspect a tree is contributing to a power outage in your area, please call 1-800-895-4999. Or for more information about Xcel Energy's tree maintenance program, call for our free tree trimming near power lines booklet at 1-800-895-4999. We want to assist you in doing everything possible to make certain you keep your family safe throughout the early spring season. This message is brought to you as a service of Xcel Energy and AM 1150 KNRC.
Next,
I need something for my feet.
Yeah, I caught a whiff.
Fred, to the front. We got a guy here with smelly feet. Bring the good stuff to Dr. Scholl's.
Thanks a lot.
Whoa, you must be the smelly feet guy. Here.
Dr. Scholl's deodorant foot powder?
Oh, yeah, it works immediately and lasts all day.
What about that gold?
Look, I've been in your shoes. Well, thankfully not your shoes. Dr. Scholl's is better. It has more odor-destroying power than that Gold Bond foot powder.
I'll take it.
He's taking the Dr. Scholl's, folks.
Dr. Scholl's foot powder. Get the odor out now.
The Hudson Gardens and Event Center welcomes Professor Tom Noel, Dr. Colorado, in the continuing lecture series on Sunday, April 25th at 7 p.m. Professor Noel will discuss the South Platte River Renaissance in the heated garden canopy. Hudson Gardens and Event Center is located at 6115 South Santa Fe Drive in Littleton, just south of Bowles Avenue. Tickets are $6 and can be purchased via phone at 303-797-8565, extension 321. Or online at www.hudsongardens.org. Tune in to AM 1150 KNRC on Saturday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. for the Kiefel Cycling Hour, featuring seven-time Tour de France competitor and Olympic bronze medalist Ron Kiefel. Ron and Megan will talk about cycling news, equipment, and great local rides. It doesn't matter if you're training for the Tour de France like Ron Kiefel, or in Megan's case, just taking those training wheels off for the first time. The Kiefel Cycling Hour has something for everyone, every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. on AM 1150 KNRC.
Where is Justin? Where is Justin? A roving man about town could soon be in your neighborhood. And if you want us at your event, let us know by calling AM 1150 KNRC and ask for Justin.
What's going on here?
Hear where he'll be next by listening to AM 1150 KNRC. Now, filling in for Enid, here is Washington Post Bureau Chief T.R. Reid.
Hello, Colorado. We're here with Professor Peter Singer. Professor, I bet you're excited. I'm kind of excited to see that questions of ethics can get people so riled up.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's good. I think we need more of it. And I enjoyed Lucy's comment. I appreciated it because, you know, in my view, it's not that I'm putting a liberal point of view or a conservative point of view. I'm throwing up some questions for people to respond to. And she did respond, and that's exactly the kind of discussion that we should be having.
Yeah, I feel that too, and that's why your book, The President of Good and Evil, is so timely, because there are moral questions involved in what our country's about. Would you talk to us briefly about your analysis of the moral dimensions of President Bush's decision to go to war in Iraq?
Yes, obviously there are a number of issues. We have to remember that originally the purpose that this was, we were told this was necessary, was because of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. Now, it's turned out that it seems like he didn't have those weapons. Certainly they haven't turned up.
Yes.
But the more significant question, I think, is whether it was up to any one country to say this nation is a threat to others, though not an immediate threat, that is, not actually attacking us, and we are going to remove the government of this country. Whether or not the United Nations supports us, to me this was one of the problems, that Bush has been really disparaging of the United Nations, although in his press conference yesterday he said that they, you know, had an important role in handing over sovereignty. But,
yes.
But in fact his attitude to them was, you know, we'd like your support if you'll give it, but if not, we're going to go ahead anyway. And I feel that it's not really up to one nation to make these decisions, that really... You know, indeed, the Security Council did, as it turns out, know better, it seems. That is, that the French were right to say that the inspectors should be given more time to find out what the situation was. And that we would have been better to be guided by the idea that we want to support and bolster the authority of the only body in the world that can provide a collective method of settling some of these issues. And I think that you know, it would be a much better situation if we didn't just say we're the big military superpower, and we can decide when we're going to intervene militarily in another country or not.
I hear you. Let me ask you a question. Maybe this is a too stupid a question or not a legitimate question, but you lived in Australia and you've now spent, I think, 5 years in the United States. Is it possible to assess a whole nation's moral status? I mean, is Australia or the United States clearly more or less ethical than the other? Can you see instances of this?
I can't give an overall judgment. You know, I think there are different things going on. I mean, one thing I really love about the United States is just that it does have ideals that are important, and Americans think that the ideals of the Founding Fathers are important, and they want to live up to them.
Yes.
And that's a wonderful.
This is not true in every country?
It's not true in every country. I think that, you know, you're more likely to find people who are a bit cynical in Australia, maybe, about this and don't think that ideals are so important. Maybe the same is true in Europe. And yet at the same time, in other respects, I want to say that both Australia and Europe are better societies in that they really actually are more compassionate for the worst off members of both of their own societies and of the world as a whole. I mean,
they relish the welfare state.
Well, they certainly think, you know, both liberals and conservatives think
yes.
that it's important. I mean, we've had a conservative government in Australia now for the last 8 years, or I don't know, 6 years, I think it is. That government has never suggested that it wants to eliminate the universal health care coverage that every Australian enjoys.
Yes.
And the same is true with conservative governments in Britain, say like Margaret Thatcher's government or John Major's government. They still saw maintaining universal health care as basic, as essential. Also, I'd point out that those governments do give more to foreign aid, which we've been talking about, as a percentage
yes.
of how much the nation earns than
yes.
the United States does.
And that's kind of an index of morality, I guess. On
well, it's a partial index, yeah. It's not everything, but it does tell us something, I think. And when you get, say, countries like Sweden or Denmark or the Netherlands that give perhaps 10 times or 8 times
yes.
as much.
Fine.
As the United States. That
okay, thanks very much, Professor Singer, for joining us and talking about your book, The President of Good and Evil, on KNRC 1150 AM.
Both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Inglewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
NBC News Radio, I'm John Siegenthaler. One Palestinian leader says President Bush's endorsement of a controversial Israeli plan to dismantle some Jewish settlements endangers the whole region. Israeli Prime Minister Sharon says his country is trying for peace.
Despite the repeated terror attacks against us, the people of Israel continues to wish for the achievement of a viable peace.
Mr. Bush now says Israel has a legitimate claim on some of the land Palestinians say is theirs. The commander of U.S. Marines posted outside the Iraqi city of Fallujah says a ceasefire may not last. They've been scattered gunfights, and officers say American forces may have to resume their offensive. Evidence that rising mortgage rates are stopping many people from getting home loans, the Mortgage Bankers Association reports a nearly 31% drop in refinancing. I'll see you later on CNBC. I'm John Siegenthaler, NBC News Radio.
Mike Ditka, NFL Hall of Fame player and coach.
Hey, I know staying in the game is what really counts. So what you're doing now isn't working. Do what I did. Make a change. Ask about Levitra. Levitra, or Denifil HCL. A change might be all you need to stay in the game.
Individual results may vary. For more information, visit Levitra.com. Call 1-866-LEVITRA or ask your doctor if a free trial of prescription Levitra is right for you. Levitra, stay in the game.
Get the good stuff.
Did you know that Napa Auto Parts has all the performance and appearance products you need for your sport compact car? Just check out the new Extreme Streets department at your nearest Napa Auto Parts store. You'll find all the top names like NOS, K&N, Flowmaster, and a huge selection of performance and style accessories from APC. This is the good stuff. So stop by Napa Auto Parts and check out our new Extreme Streets section today.
Get the good stuff.
Napa, get the good stuff.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 68 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin, KNRC News. Michael Blagg's murder trial is drawing to a close. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic with Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Things simmering down now around town. Most everything that we had earlier in the hour has been cleaned up, just about back to normal. Rock scaling work continues at I-70 in Georgetown. Another 3 hours or so worth of work there. When I-70 is closed down for that work, expect the closures to last about 20 minutes at a stretch. There's a lot of great TV out there, and TV Guide Channel helps you find it. Watch TV Guide Channel to find out what's new, what's best, and what's next on TV. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Closing arguments are being heard today in the Michael Blagg murder trial in Grand Junction. He's on trial for the murder of his wife, Jennifer, in 2001. Blagg's lawyer says the woman's death was the result of a burglary, but prosecutor Frank Daniels says Blagg staged the crime in an attempt to throw investigators off track.
Both victims were removed from the residence for disposal by a careful and methodical offender who attempted to stage the crime scene in an effort to direct the police investigation away from himself.
Jennifer Blagg's body was found in the Mesa County landfill 7 months after she and the couple's six-year-old daughter, Abby, were reported missing by Michael Blagg. The girl is still missing and is presumed dead. The jury could get the case later this afternoon or tomorrow. This report brought to you by Subway. The Denver Water Board will implement two-day-a-week watering this summer. KNRC's Bruce Morton was at this morning's meeting.
This year's restrictions take effect May 1st.
They allow you to water your lawn 2 days per week, 15 minutes per zone for an unlimited number of zones. The plan prohibits watering between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. It also includes a surcharge schedule and what it refers to as courteous enforcement. Bruce Morton, Denver.
Colorado lawmakers have rejected a bill that would have moved the state's caucuses to January. The bill would have given Colorado more of a voice in the presidential selection process. The state Senate approved the measure, but it died in the House. A county clerk says the bill would have been difficult to implement. A Denver grand jury is sifting through evidence against Richard Paul White, who has told police that he killed five women and dumped their bodies in various parts of the state. Investigators found the bodies of two women buried in the backyard of a house once occupied by White. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche meet the Dallas Stars in Game 4 of the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. The Avs go into the game with a 2-1 advantage. The Avs and Stars come back to Denver on Saturday for Game 5. Denver Nuggets are in Texas tonight as well. They're playing the Spurs in San Antonio in the last regular season game for the Nuggets. Nuggets have made the playoffs for the first time since the 94-95 season and could wind up playing the Spurs in the first round. Colorado Rockies and Arizona D-backs get back at it tonight at Coors Field after having yesterday off. Joe Kennedy throws for the Rocks in this second game of the Rockies' first three-game homestand of the season. Colorado beat Arizona 7-4 Monday in the home opener. We should find out later this afternoon what the rest of the Denver Broncos' 2004 schedule will look like. Fans already know that Denver plays a home game against the Kansas City Chiefs in Week 1. Subway introduces four new fresh salads like the grilled chicken and baby spinach. All are made fresh before your eyes with your choice of regular or carb control dressings. Subway, eat fresh. Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is up next. KNRC News time is 2:05.
Get your free AM 1150 KNRC coffee mug by going to our website, knrcradio.com. knrcradio.com. And then unlimited free refills at Sugar Beet Cafe with your mug. Just another way to say thanks for listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Velcaro Paint and Decorating hopes you'll forgive us for bragging a little. We've won an award. And because the environment is really important to us, we're pretty proud of it. Velcaro, a Benjamin Moore dealer, was recently named a recipient of the Environmental Achievement Award by the state of Colorado. What's our achievement? It's the Wet Paint Color Swatch program, which Velcaro pioneered nationally. As you know, choosing the right paint color is usually by trial and error. In the past, consumers had to buy an entire quart to get a sample. Wrong colors often get tossed out and eventually make their way into the environment. But Velcaro offers 1.5-ounce paint swatches, enough to cover 4 square feet, and more than enough to make the right decision. They're inexpensive and come in more than 6,000 colors, including our entire Benjamin Moore line. Wet paint color swatches. Good for you, good for the environment. From Velcaro Paint and Decorating, a Benjamin Moore quality paint dealer. 5475 Leechdale Drive, just one block west of Holly. Online at Velcaro.com.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. It's going to be beautiful through the afternoon, even though a bit on the windy side with southwesterlies at 10 to 20. A lot of sunshine, a few air, a warm high of 77 tonight with a low of 43. Still very nice, breezy tomorrow with a high of 72, and on Friday, sunny and in the low 70s. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Partly cloudy and 68 now. KNRC news time is 2:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
From AM 1150 KNRC, Denver's choice for talk. Now, one of the Mile High City's most compelling talk hosts, Enid Goldstein. The producer is Joe Anderson. Board operations, Jordan Lyles. Now, here's Enid.
It's definitely true that Enid Goldstein is one of the Mile High City's most compelling talk show hosts, but Enid's in California today, so you're stuck with one of the Mile High City's dullest, most boring talk show hosts, T.R. Reid. That's me. I'm a local newspaper. I work for the Washington Post here in Denver. Fill in for Enid now and then. And, excuse me, those of you who are listening earlier heard, I think, a really fascinating discussion with Professor Peter Singer, who I think is safely described as the world's number one expert on ethical conduct. And he has a new book out, and I think Simple Morality requires that I plug his book one more time since he took the time to talk to us for an hour. His book is from Dutton Books. It's called The President of Good and Evil, The Ethics of George W. Bush. It's interesting, he pointed out to us, as you heard, that In Britain, the subtitle is Taking George W. Bush Seriously, which I personally think is a much better subtitle, because it's certainly true that a lot of people on the left refuse to take Bush seriously. They think he's an airhead. They hate him. They say that. And they just kind of brush off anything he says. I think Professor Peter Singer can fairly be described as a critic of the president, but he doesn't brush him off. He doesn't call him an airhead. He takes his position seriously and then asks the question in this book whether President Bush lives up to his own rhetoric, whether he tries to genuinely be the compassionate conservative that he said he was going to be. It's an interesting concept, and as we heard, he has some... He's a pretty rigorous guy. He's a pretty meticulous person. Even if you don't agree with the conclusion that Peter Singer comes up with at the end of his thought process, he's certainly meticulous and rigorous about the way he does it, and I thank the people who called in. Before we talk to Peter Singer on this show, we had an interesting discussion going on about the questions that the press should have asked President Bush last night at the press conference, and they didn't. I'm a reporter. I've gone to presidential press conferences, and I was a little disappointed with the questions from the reporters. Now, you know, they only get one or two chances a year at George W. Bush. He doesn't do this very often, and I think they felt, the reporters felt a need to ask big cosmic questions, but of course, most of them, as you saw, sort of drew the same answer. In fact, the president, I think, was, quite repetitive. The questions were somewhat repetitive, and he was pretty repetitive. I think the question, tell us what mistakes you've made, is not a useful question on either side. It's certainly the president is not going to answer it. I don't think any president is going to say, oh, yeah, I'm glad you asked because I messed up this and I fouled up that and I screwed up this other thing. They're just not going to answer that question. I think it took President Bush three tries, but he did eventually get to what I think is the correct answer for that, is that's a matter for the voters to decide whether I've made mistakes. And he did say that eventually. We've had several people call in with interesting questions, I think in some cases more specific, that is, more directed questions, and therefore arguably harder for the president to duck than the reporters asked. I have my own list of questions here that I think I would have liked to hear the reporters ask, and I'd like to hear yours. Give us a call at 303-382-1150, 1150. It's 1150 a.m. This is very clever. 303-382-1150. Give us a call and tell us what you thought the reporters, what you would have liked, the questions you would have liked to have heard, or maybe the answers you would have liked to hear, because my sense of that press conference is that that press conference will perfectly satisfy the people who like George W. Bush anyway, the people who like him just for his refusal to be specific, for his insistence that he knows what he's doing is right, and therefore he's going to keep doing it. I think a lot of people are satisfied with that. That's their definition of leadership, and they think a president who knows what he's doing is going to keep doing it, doesn't really have to lay out all the details for the people. I think people on the other side, people who think this man is maddeningly vague and indefinite about what he's doing, and a man who has taken us to a war with 675 Americans dead and is unable to provide any kind of plan for getting us out of it, a lot of people think that that's a person who doesn't deserve to be president. I think both sides probably had their views confirmed by that performance last night. But I'd like to hear from you what you think, and particularly what questions should have been asked that weren't asked last night. I think, to me, the most obvious one that nobody really, they sort of hinted at, but nobody asked is, please tell us your plan for getting our soldiers out of there. I think another way to ask the question would be, I'm sure you have a plan for removing our soldiers from Iraq. What will it be? What will we have to do in order to declare mission accomplished and bring our soldiers home so they're not killed anymore? I'm not sure that we would have gotten an answer from President Bush on that. His answer on that was, when he was asked how long people have to be there, he would said as long as necessary, which, of course, is no answer at all. I think that's a completely unacceptable answer. But I would have liked to hear somebody ask him in a way that kind of makes it hard to avoid, what is your plan? Please tell us your plan. I don't think I've heard a plan from the president on how to get out of Vietnam. I have to say I haven't heard a plan from Senator Kerry either about how to get out of, not Vietnam, I'm sorry I said Vietnam, out of Iraq. I have to say, having been in the U.S. Navy during the Vietnam War, this, and having been very eager to have it end, I have to say, more and more the rhetoric surrounding our war in Iraq sounds like Vietnam. I'm not saying Vietnam and Iraq are the same war, but the rhetoric sounds the same. We're doing the right thing. I know I'm right. President Lyndon Johnson said repeatedly, we can't cut and run from Vietnam. We can't cut and run. And now this is the language being used by the Bush administration. We can't cut and run. We'll stay as long as necessary. I think Richard Nixon said exactly that about the war in Vietnam. So I'm sorry for my slip of the tongue comparing Iraq to saying Vietnam instead of Iraq, but I think a lot of people, particularly those of us who were in the military at the time of the Vietnam War, are seeing lots of parallels. The question I think that was finally asked about Vietnam was, look, we're going to leave sometime. Why not now? And to me, that seems a legitimate question about Iraq, too. We're not going to be there forever. I hope we're not even going to be there for the whole 4 years of the next presidential term. If we're going to leave sometime, why not leave now? Is an interesting question. It'd be interesting to hear the answer. I think Kevin is calling. Kevin, hi. Sorry I kept you waiting.
That's okay.
You have a question should have been asked?
Yeah. Well, actually, two questions.
Okay, let's have them.
If I could. Now, the first one would be, and I'll let me lay this out. You know, he doesn't have these press conferences. This is only the third primetime press conference since he took office, right?
Yes, right.
The common consensus is he's doing this because they're in trouble.
Yes, I think that's right.
His numbers are going down. Things are a total mess in Iraq.
Yes.
And I guess the question that I would like to have seen someone ask was, sir, we realize you're doing this press conference because you're in trouble, but do you have something new to give hope to the American people, you know, some new strategy, some new development, some new thing that you're doing that can offset all this terrible news we're hearing?
Yeah, that's a good question, because what we heard, as I saw the New York Times said this morning, what the president said, he could have said, in fact, did say at a press conference last April.
Yeah, with the same old thing. He just
He's
resolute. I think another, you know, the headline in the paper today was resolute. I think they could have gone with pig-headed or intransigent or something, you know, but all they've got is resolute. Now, my other question, unrelated to Iraq, would have been, and sir, how is the investigation into the leak of Valerie Plame's identity going along?
There's a good question. Yeah, that's an interesting question.
Someone
Nobody
should have popped that out of the blue and caught him off guard. It would have been great.
Yeah, that tells you a lot about the Washington media, doesn't it? There was a time period where that was the only issue in the world. And what is it, 4 months later, they still outed a CIA agent and broke the law.
Yeah, well, it seems like reporters used to actually not let these things go away. You know,
yes.
I mean, it's like these things are the news of the day, and we'll just move on to the next topic.
Yeah, I hear you, exactly.
You know, someone needs to go down for that. And I also, I might speculate, since I have your reporter, what do you think of this? I've felt this for some time, but when I see Robert Novak on CNN,
yes,
I can't help but think that man ought to be serving a little time in relation to this thing. I think he's complicit in whatever law was violated in revealing her identity. I think he knew what he was doing when he did it.
Yeah, but I think he definitely knew what he was doing when he did it. He has the right to publish that information. He didn't break the law.
Why?
Because it was provided to him by the White House. The White House told him, and he has the right to publish what the White House tells him.
Well, you don't think that when he did that he knew that he was revealing her identity and that he probably was aware that if anyone else had done it, it would be a crime?
I don't think he was aware that he was endangering secret CIA operations. He may have been, but I don't think he was aware of that.
Yeah.
I know, Bob. I don't think...
Well, the reason I say it is...
Would Bob have done it if he thought he were causing danger to somebody? Maybe not. He's a tough guy, but I think probably not.
Well,
what do you think about this question of should Novak be required to reveal who told it to him?
Yes. And here's the thing. I believe that Novak is not being neutral. I believe he's ideologically motivated. I believe he's a partisan, and I believe he was in on the scam to punish Joseph Wilson.
Well, I think that's all true. I completely agree with that.
Because of that, then I believe that if someone violated a law in that regard, he's complicit, and he should be punished as well. I don't think a reporter should be able to hide behind this, you know, hey, I'm a journalist, I can do this with impunity crap. I mean, he broke the law as much as anyone else did in revealing that identity.
Well, if the White House tells you something and you're allowed to put that in the newspaper, that's not against the law. It's protected by the First Amendment.
Well, what
I'd
you
say.
Know?
But I will disagree with you on whether Novak should have to reveal. I mean, your argument is going to be, I think, and I understand it, look, we're spending millions of dollars on a special prosecutor and spending all this time questioning people and digging through files, and all you have to do is make one call to Novak and get the answer and figure out who broke the law, and then you can try him. But my view, of course, I'm a reporter, is that no, Novak should not reveal the name, because one of the ways that reporters find problems, which can then be fixed in our society, is by people telling us stuff. And if we reveal their names, they're going to stop telling ourselves.
I agree, and I agree with that, and I'm familiar with that, and I have no problem with that. However, I would say that sometimes the problem is something that isn't being revealed but being created. And this problem was created when he published that story, not revealed. And so that's a completely different set of circumstances. And I think that there, of course, in every instance, there must be an exception. As a rule, the reporter should be protected, but sometimes there's an exception. And when the problem is created because a reporter runs a story, and I believe, like I said, I believe he did it with an ideological bent, that he was part of the, quote, conspiracy to out her, then I think that he's culpable and he shouldn't be protected. In fact, he should be prosecuted.
You make a powerful argument. I would not make an exception to the rule here, but I see your point. If there ever were one that deserves an exception, this is it. Kevin, thanks so much. We'll be back.
Thank you. Sorry, I went off track.
No, you did fine. You did fine. It was a good question, too. We're going to be back and get some more questions for President Bush in just a minute, but for the moment, this is T.R. Reid on AM 1150 KNRC.
What hit the fan while you were hitting the sack?
The worst is yet to come.
Find out mornings with Dick Kelsey during the Jenny Lakey Show, exclusively on AM 1150 KNRC.
Shopping for a mortgage should be no different from shopping for any big ticket item, a car, a refrigerator, a house. You're looking for the best possible value available. Investment Property Funding Incorporated offers just that. The best mortgage rates available, starting at 1.25% for primary residences and just 1.65% for investment properties, with no points, no junk fees, and no surprises at closing. Increase your cash flow by hundreds, if not thousands of dollars per month. Investment Property Funding can handle all your mortgage needs with your choice of fixed rate, adjustable rate, or interest-only programs. They have a full menu of options for savvy, no-nonsense borrowers like you. Don't wait. Get the rates you deserve today by calling the professionals at Investment Property Funding Incorporated at 303-531-8508. That's 303-531-8508. Your mortgage experts, 303-531-8508, or online at ipfunding.com.
Hi, this is Jimmy Lakey, and I'd like to tell you about Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Colorado. Nationally, they're celebrating their 100th year of service, and you can help them celebrate by making a difference. You can support Big Brothers and Big Sisters in many ways. For instance, did you know that by donating your car, you can help provide one-to-one mentoring for over 4,000 of Colorado's kids in need? These kids really need your help, and it's easy to do. Your car or truck is a great tax deduction, and Big Brothers and Big Sisters will tow your vehicle at no expense to you. Even if your car or truck can't be driven, the salvage value makes a huge difference. If you don't have a car to donate, cash is also welcome with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. They also accept most boats, RVs, trailers, and motorcycles. Big Brothers and Big Sisters has touched many people in Colorado and across the nation, and possibly someone you know personally. So join the celebration. Donate today. Call them at 303-433-3666 and tell them Jimmy Lakey told you to call. 303-433-3666. Celebrate 100 years of service. Support Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Colorado.
Tune in Saturday mornings from 10 to noon for Style Matters, sponsored locally by Denver Skin Aesthetics. Denver skincare experts offering Botox and Restylane. Style Matters entertains you each week with the latest in fashion and style. Hosted by Judy Schwartz and Evelinda Ehrman of the Style Matters column in the Rocky Mountain News. Listen to Style Matters each Saturday from 10 to noon, sponsored by Denver Skin Aesthetics. Denver skincare experts.
I'm Bill Griffith, CNBC Business Radio. A much bigger than expected increase in consumer prices last month led to fears on Wall Street today that maybe the Federal Reserve is going to have to raise interest rates sooner rather than later. We did have a late day rally among the major averages, but it failed to bring them back into positive territory. The Dow finished the day down 3 points. It closed at 10,378, while the NASDAQ was down 5 points today at 2,024. And we're getting some more earnings out tonight after the bell. Texas Instruments, which is the world's largest maker of chips for cell phones, has just reported first quarter profits that were in line with expectations. TI says its revenue was up 34% from a year ago at this time, and Texas Instruments shares in after-hours trading are down 30 cents at $28.68. Disney executives plan to meet next month with angry managers of various state pension funds, including from New York and California. They called for the meeting to discuss their future investments. I'm Bill Griffith, CNBC Business Radio.
Get the good stuff.
Did you know that Napa Auto Parts has all the performance and appearance products you need for your sport compact car? Just check out the new Extreme Streets department at your nearest Napa Auto Parts store. You'll find all the top names like NOS, K&N, Flowmaster, and a huge selection of performance and style accessories from APC. This is the good stuff. So stop by Napa Auto Parts and check out our new Extreme Streets section today.
Get the good stuff.
Napa, get the good stuff.
Now with weather on the hour, here's meteorologist Jenna Moran.
Thanks so much, Tom. It looks like the jet stream will usher in temperatures way below normal. Clouds will be with us all this week. No sunshine is expected for quite some time. Also, heavy wind advisories will be in effect with a possibility for downed trees and power lines. But there is good news on the way.
What's that, Jenna?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
We're in touch, so you be in touch. Call us with your news tips, traffic info, and when the weather's bad. 303-382-1150. Help out your neighbors by letting us know the situation in your area. We're the only locally owned Denver radio station, and we're concerned about Denver, the mountains, and the Front Range. AM 1150, KNRC. Now, filling in for Enid, here is Washington Post Bureau Chief T.R. Reid.
Hi, Colorado. It is T.R. Reid, and we've been dealing with this question of what questions you wish the press had asked or you think the press should have asked President Bush last night in his press conference. If I could just throw out a couple more of mine. I'm really surprised that the reporters haven't asked President Bush about his famous or notorious statement, "Bring 'em on." It was just about a year ago that people, he was said by a reporter, you know, there's some threat that Iraqi dissidents might attack American soldiers, and our president said, "Bring them on." And, of course, this was replayed over and over and over and over again on the Arabic TV networks, and sure enough, they came on. We've lost about 650 American soldiers since the president said that. I think the question is, why would an American president say something that encourages attacks on American soldiers? I've never understood what the president had in mind when he said that. I think Lindsay in Denver has some questions for President Bush. Lindsay, I'm sorry I kept you waiting.
No, that's all right. I worked in military intelligence, well, with some intelligent people in the military.
It's so, not an oxymoron?
Not in this particular case.
Yeah, I was when I was in the military. They were really smart people there, I thought.
Well.
Some.
Yes. Well, my question would be a bit different than the average question.
Okay.
And during World War II, the Allies captured an Enigma machine. Are you familiar with it?
Yes.
Well, is this particular situation similar, that is, to do with the World Trade Center?
And I don't get it. I'm not understanding your question.
Well, you remember the Enigma machine?
Yes.
We captured it. We We decoded their messages.
Yes.
And a small town was sacrificed.
Yes, I remember that. They couldn't stop the bombing because then the Germans would know we had their code.
Okay.
Yes.
If we had captured an Enigma machine or something similar.
Yes.
Would or is it possible that we were able to avoid a more terrible catastrophe and have to sacrifice the World Trade Center?
That's an interesting. So the question would be, did we know that the Twin Towers were going to be down, but we couldn't stop it because that would indicate that we had insight into their plans?
Let's suppose they had some of those Russian suitcase nukes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Would,
a dirty bomb or something.
A dirty bomb, yes.
Yeah.
Would we, what do you think?
So what do you think the president would have said if you'd asked that question?
He would have avoided it. But,
well, he avoids them all.
But it would have awakened
What answer would you have liked to have heard?
Well, let me say this. It would have awakened the consciousness of other people.
Yeah, yeah, to that possibility.
Okay.
Yeah, I hear
because,
you.
Because I've lived in many foreign countries, lived
yes.
there. And I know that we Americans are victims of propaganda, and we don't know it.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay.
Okay.
So what do you think the answer is? What's the correct answer to your question? Did they?
Well, let's say this.
Yeah.
According to the August report and some earlier reports that have been brushed over or forgotten
mm-hmm.
by various agents that said, hey, I told them in this month or that month that
yeah.
something was going on.
Yeah.
They had access to some information.
Fine.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, they clearly did. And you're talking about that report given to the president on August 6th in which he says he didn't learn anything.
Well, if they gave him a report on August 6th, they must have known in June or July. Okay.
Yeah, right,
something.
Sure.
And they
yeah,
would
yeah.
verify the information before they gave it to him.
Yeah.
So they had access to some knowledge before it was passed to him. Now, let's suppose they did have access to some more sensitive or dangerous terrorist activity, okay, and just bits and pieces and weren't able to put it all together. And if they had revealed the knowledge of the World Trade Center thing, they would have...
Yeah, they would have blown their cover.
So
yeah.
You see what I mean by the Enigma machine here.
I see exactly, excuse me, what you're getting at. Lindsay, thanks very much for your call. We've got some other people with questions. Thanks, Lindsay.
One quick one.
Yeah.
Okay. The world, WMDs, weapons
yeah.
of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Was that problem taken care of in October?
What do you mean?
Well, before that is, before October, there was mentioned that the weapons of mass destruction were in a valley in Syria.
Yeah, I remember that. And then they turned out, yeah, I think that's. Somebody did actually ask him that question, what happened to those weapons you said.
What, do you remember what happened in Syria?
No.
Israel went in and bombed something.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Bomb?
Yeah, that's a good question, too. Is that what it was?
Okay.
Thanks, Lindsay. Appreciate it. Fred, what do you think?
Hello, Mr. Reed.
Hi, Fred.
I don't believe this president has a clue.
Yeah.
I really think this man's a follower and not a leader.
You mean you listened to his hour-long presentation last night and didn't feel he...
When he said that, you know, I should be a little bit faster on my feet, he really meant it. He really doesn't know what's going on.
But you know, as I said before, he was answering a question. Tell us what mistakes you've made that no president is going to answer.
Correct. And Mr. Reed, you know, I think the reason why there's so much hatred from the Arab world towards us
yep.
is because of a single policy about Israel.
And well, it's part of it.
If I had one question to ask, I would have said, "What are you going to do to resolve the problem in the Middle East?" Specifically Palestine.
Yeah.
Because I think if that was resolved, Iraq would never have been a problem.
Yes. Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody ever even brings that subject up. Even though he said before the war started that he really wants to work on this problem, he's taken a back seat. He has done nothing.
You know, as I mentioned earlier, this excellent story by Anthony Shadid in the Washington Post about the causes of the uprising in Fallujah and the other cities that have cost so many American lives. And part of it was the shutting down of Sadr's newspaper, but the other proximate cause was the killing of that leader in Palestine by the Israelis.
Correct.
and that prompted them to take it out on us. So, yeah, there are definitely connections there.
And I don't know if you recall, but the time we turned on Sadr is when he said that he supports Hezbollah and Hamas.
Yeah, and he wanted to bring them to Iraq. Yes, that's right.
I don't think he said that. He said that he would be an arm for them in Iraq. And I think he meant that as being a supporter of Hezbollah and Hamas.
You. Yes.
And
yeah,
again, we took that as being our war, not Israel's.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Fred. Steve, did I get this right?
Hello, TR.
Yeah, hi. You have a question that should have been asked?
If I was going to ask the president a question, I'd ask, what was Saddam Hussein's role in world terrorism since the first Gulf War? And the reason I ask that is I think he's done a very poor job of communicating what Saddam's actually done.
I agree with that. Do you think that Saddam had a role?
Well, he certainly did in the first World Trade Center bombing. All of the people that came over and were involved in that bombing were here on Iraqi passports.
In 1993, yeah.
In 1993, the only one to escape back to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, he funded several terrorists that were setting off bombs in Israel, including Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad from Palestinian branch of Islamic Jihad. And there are some links. I don't know how credible they are, but Stephen Hayes wrote an article called Case Closed that attached several Iraqis to the 9/11 attack. So what I'd like to do, I think they've just done a poor job of communicating what they know, and no one in the press seems to want to ask the questions.
Yeah, I hear you. And your question sort of would have been leading the president to make a stronger case for his position.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. It would have been a good question.
Okay, that's
yeah.
All I have.
Thanks very much, Steve. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few more people, several more people calling with questions. Please hold on the line. We're going to break at this point, but we'll be back. Let's take a break for news with KNRC's Tim McLaughlin.
Thanks, TR. Good afternoon. It's partly cloudy and 68 degrees. The Denver Water Board has announced its summer water restriction plan. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic with Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Inbound Auraria Street at Auraria Parkway, rather, at 7th Street. Five-car accident with injuries. A lot of commotion in that area, as you might expect, causing a little bit of slowing both inbound and outbound on Auraria Parkway. Also, Denver police have closed the ramp from I-25 to Auraria Parkway until that accident can be cleaned up. Everything else around town moving along in good shape. If you're in Boulder, watch for a minor accident, 10th and Cascade. Get express front disc brake service at Pep Boys for just $49.99 after a mail-in rebate, or get up to a $50 mail-in rebate with our Quiet Stop brake service. See store for details, Pep Boys, parts, service, and so much more. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
If you're a Denver Water customer, you'll only be able to water twice a week starting May 1st. The Denver Water Board announced its drought response plan today, which includes 15-minute per zone watering for an unlimited number of zones, plus no watering allowed between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. This report brought to you by the network of 17 John Elway AutoNation showrooms. The jury in the Michael Blagg murder trial in Grand Junction could get the case later this afternoon or tomorrow. Closing arguments are being heard today, with the defense saying Jennifer Blagg's death was the result of a burglary. Prosecutors saying Michael Blagg killed his wife and then staged things to cover up the crime. State lawmakers have said no to a bill that would have moved the Colorado caucuses to January so that the state could have had more of an influence in the selection of presidential candidates. The state Senate approved the measure, but it died in the House. The plan would have been tough to implement, according to one county clerk. At the John Elway Service Centers, the job is done right the first time at a competitive price. Plus, they have the right tires at the right price, all in stock now. John Elway Service Centers, they're the experts, honest. Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is up next. KNRC News Time is 2:37.
The Lamont Opera Theater Program of the University of Denver presents Mozart's Marriage of Figaro, April 15th through 18th. The Marriage of Figaro is sung in Italian with super titles in English. Lamont Opera Theater's Marriage of Figaro will be produced in the glorious June Swainer Gates Concert Hall on the southwest corner of East Islip and South University Boulevard. Plenty of parking is free with a ticket in the parking garage just south of the building. Tickets range from $8 to $25 with performances Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 in the evening with a 2:30 matinee on August 18th. Don't miss Mozart's most beloved opera, The Marriage of Figaro, April 15th through 18th in the Gates Concert Hall on the DU campus. Your tickets can be reserved by calling the Lamont box office at 303-871-7720. Go to Ticketmaster at 303-830-TIXS or online at Ticketmaster.com. Mozart's Marriage of Figaro and DU's Lamont Opera Theater program.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Nothing to complain about as far as the amount of sunshine and the warm temperatures are concerned, but it is going to stay a little more than just breezy for the next couple of days. Winds out of the southwest this afternoon at 10 to 20 miles an hour with a high of 77. Overnight low tonight of 43. Breezy 72 tomorrow, and it'll still be breezy and in the low 70s on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Partly cloudy and 68. KNRC News Time is 2:38. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Is someone in your house a beast when it's time to get up?
Oh no, he's up.
Is he a monster until he gets what he needs to get started every morning?
Kids, go to the basement.
Don't send the kids away. While the coffee's brewing, keep the dial here with Jimmy Lakey on AM 1150.
Good morning, everyone.
And everything he and the whole family needs is right there.
It's going to be a great day.
Come on back up, kids.
AM 1150, KNRC.
Hi, I'm Evelinda Ehrman.
And I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live.
Even if you're not born with great style, you can buy it.
Just like we do. And this extends to our homes. Element, Denver's newest furniture store for urban home furnishings, accessories, and artwork, meets all our style needs and will meet yours, too.
Element has multifunctional furniture to maximize your space in a condo, apartment, loft, or smaller home. The clean lines of Element's furniture for today's urban lifestyle will work with what you already own.
You'll love their eclectic mix of styles, all presented in a way you can envision in your own home.
Prices are affordable, with lamps as low as $100 and sofas starting at about $1,000. Interior design services are available.
Element is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 6, Saturday, 10 to 7, and Sunday, 1 to 5. Element is located at 77 West 9th Avenue, a half a block west of Broadway in the Golden Triangle. 303-825-3770.
Element. Your lifestyle, your home, your element.
You told us you needed more traffic reports during the morning and afternoon commute, and we listened. AM 1150 KNRC now provides you traffic reports at least five times each hour during mornings and afternoons. After all, we are the third worst traffic city in America. AM 1150 KNRC. Filling in for Enid, here is Washington Post Bureau Chief T.R. Reid.
Hello, Colorado. It is T.R. Reid. We've been asking people to tell us what questions they thought the media should have asked of President Bush last night. And we've got a lot of questions out there. Let's see. I think Eric in Denver. Eric, did I find you?
Yeah. Hi, T.R.
Hi. Sorry I kept you waiting. Oh, you have a question?
You're doing a great job.
Oh, thanks.
Two quick comments. Before my question,
yeah,
Shadid did a very good job, but Walter Pincus, Bart Gellman, and Dana Preece should have gotten some kind of Pulitzer for their coverage of WMD issue.
They absolutely should have. They were on that case. They pointed out long before that what was wrong with that argument and why the Bush administration was wrong.
Yeah, they did a great job.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
I don't say too many nice things about the mainstream media, but they did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you.
The previous caller referenced the Stephen Hayes article, Case Closed. To my recollection, that was totally discredited. That was based on a Douglas Fife memo.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah, that
yeah everybody
baloney.
Discredited it afterwards.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
it was baloney.
Now my question.
Yeah.
Why was the Bin Laden family quickly ferreted out of the country immediately after 9/11, and who okayed that decision?
Terrific question. Yes, I wanted to hear that one asked myself. You're referring to this... chartered plane that took 146 people back to Saudi Arabia at a time when no airplanes were leaving America.
At a time when Al Gore couldn't fly or Bill Clinton couldn't fly, right?
That's right.
Yeah, at a time when no airplanes...
Yeah,
and not even planes that were transporting organs,
right.
Human organs, could be in the air.
I'd heard that, yeah.
And this chartered plane was allowed to leave, and it had several, many members of the Bin Laden family on it. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it did, as far as I know.
I think that's a terrific question. Of course, it's probably a question that's not going to be answered because it gets to the ties between the Saud family and the Bush family.
Yeah.
And arguably it gets to the money that's been flowing back and forth. But,
well,
yeah, I completely agree with you. It's an excellent question.
Well, it could have been asked by Craig Unger or Kevin Phillips.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Thanks, TR.
I think it's maybe the 9/11 Commission might want to get into that one.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's too far. Anyway, thanks for your question.
Thanks
excellent
a
question. I tip my hat to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Van and Boulder, you have a question should have been asked?
Yeah, I did have a question. Regarding, you know, Richard Clark's January 25th, I guess, plan.
Yeah.
And then the revised version, the improved version that you guys put together on September 24th that I guess was a strategy or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you explain to us the difference between a strategy, a plan, and a tactic? And then will you actually release both of, you know, Clark's plan and your plan to point out the differences?
Yeah, I think that's a terrific question. That gets to that interesting challenge when Senator Bill Frist said, well, let's declassify Clark's testimony and see if he lied. And
right.
Clark called his bluff and said, yeah, declassify everything. Declassify the plan I proposed, too. And they immediately stopped talking about declassifying things.
Yeah. The other thing, you were talking about the Plame affair earlier.
Yes.
And I just have to, I mean, I really respect your work a lot, and I respect journalism.
Thank you.
But I think that it's very important to point out that a columnist like Novak is not a journalist. He may be published in a newspaper, but he doesn't follow any of the rules, and most columnists don't follow the basic rules of journalistic ethics. And I think that if you're going to throw up that source argument, then you need to very much be abiding by traditional journalistic ethics.
I hear that. But the problem is, if Bob Novak blows a source out of the water, then serious journalists like Bart Gellman, for example, can't get their calls returned anymore.
I personally don't think that that's the case.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that if you are somebody that has abided by a journalistic code of ethics, I think you're still going to be able to make the same argument to the courts. But I think that you guys are, as journalists, are kind of engaging in a little bit of a thin blue line mentality.
Yeah, I hear you.
You need to police yourselves a little bit, because when you let somebody like Novak use that same power, which I think is a very special power and a very important power that journalists have to protect their sources,
yes,
to do the types of dirty work, smear jobs that he does,
Palmer
and some of the other fellows do, it doesn't fly.
You know, for me, I can. My view on the First Amendment is I don't even want to start cutting into it. I don't want to start making those distinctions. It's kind of like the Second Amendment people who say, well, if you outlaw the nuclear-powered, automatic machine gun, then that's the next step is going to be outlawing the hunting rifle kind of thing. I make the same argument. If you outlaw Big Jugs or some other outrageous magazine, you're kind of taking a shot at Time, Newsweek, and Foreign Affairs, and I don't like that.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's well and good, but what they did was dirty. The other thing is that it may not be news right now, but that prosecutor out of Chicago, from what I understand and I've, you know, caught in the news, is doing a bang-up job.
So it appears. So it appears. Now, we'll wait for the result. But, yeah,
and
it looks like he's a tough guy and they can't control him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. It's beautiful. And one last thing. One of the things that I think is really interesting about Bush's press conference last night is how quickly it's out of the news. You know, I use Google News just because I'm really interested, because I think it really reflects what people are interested in.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah,
internet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily the most important stories, but it definitely tracks what's being read and how many times they're getting hit.
Yeah.
His press conference is gone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't exist anymore. So if he was expecting any type of bounce or anything to come out of that, other than, you know, kind of reinforcing that he has a credibility gap, I don't think he's going to get what he wants.
Yeah. Well, for a lot of people, he reinforced his credibility gap. I'm arguing that for a lot of people, he strengthened the base. A lot of people looked at that and said, yeah, that's our man.
Well, I'm just glad his base is only about 40-42% this year.
Yeah, if it's even that much at this point, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Fine. Thanks very much, Van.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
I think, let's see, Ken has a question for President Bush. Sorry I kept you waiting, Ken.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Okay.
Yeah, this actually is from a caller earlier who
yeah.
talked about the alternative energy plan.
Yes.
Yeah, and my question is actually a little bit more snarky and a little bit more, you know, to the point. In the 2003 State of the Union address, he pledged $1.2 billion to studying alternative forms of energy, mostly in hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he only funded $200 million.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to him would be, you know, pretty much, you know, what happened with that $200 million? Where are we? Are you going to pledge any more? And where is that money going to come from if you're cutting taxes?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And the last question particularly gets to, like every president, he has all sorts of ambitious programs, but he's cut the budget to the point that he's borrowing to do anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really kind of flies in the face of his plan in terms of, you know, making the Middle East freer for, you know, American oil.
You know, I think the same thing happened with his $15 billion plan to fight AIDS. I stood up and cheered when the President of the United States said, we're going to put up some money to fight AIDS. But I think they've only put up $1 billion of it so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was it he said last night? You know, something about the fight on AIDS on Africa, which is his exact quote.
Well, the man, you got to give George W. Bush some leeway here. I mean, he's not the most articulate guy, but people understand what he's saying.
No, I understand, but I just thought it was kind of cute, you know.
Yeah, the war on Africa. No, I think I was thrilled when a president of the United States said we need to use some of our wealth to help with this international crisis. But they're not doing it. I mean, in one sense, it's a good thing that he just said it to raise awareness, but
yeah.
Now we're not doing it.
Yeah, exactly. He tends to be a little disingenuous. He makes all these promises like this $1.2 billion on alternate energy resources or even, you know, the mandates that he eventually made on No Child Left Behind. You know, it just makes me wonder if he was left behind, but, you know.
Thanks, Ken.
So do you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. We're going to take a break here on KNRC and pay some bills. And when we come back, we're going to hear from a person who went into, came out of, and survived an IRS tax audit. Yes, we'll have tips for you from a person who endured and survived this ordeal on 1150 AM KNRC.
Soon to be the most listened to station in Colorado.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
What the devil is that gobbling noise?
Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, folks, this is Larry King. Now, here's something you can take to heart. Welch's Purple Grape Juice. We all know by now that eating at least 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day can give us heart-healthy benefits. But did you know that just 1 6-ounce glass of Welch's Purple Grape Juice counts as a whole serving of fruit? In fact, a USDA study found that Welch's Purple Grape Juice has 3 times the antioxidant power of grapefruit or even orange juice. And as always, it's fat-free, cholesterol-free, and tastes great, too. So, would I start drinking Welch's Purple Grape Juice every day? In a heartbeat.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman. We co-host Style Matters Live, and you know we shop every chance we get.
Yeah, but in your stiletto heels, you keep slowing me down. That's why we shop at Aspen Grove. You can park directly in front of your favorite stores and walk right in.
No more walking long distances back and forth from the stores carrying heavy shopping bags, something we've been known to do.
Or driving through the parking lot praying for a spot. Spend more time shopping at Aspen Grove in Littleton, a beautiful open-air shopping center with some of the best national specialty shops, many that are exclusive to Southeast Metro Denver, such as Gap Body and Coldwater Creek with its casual chic clothing.
Don't forget Pottery Barn and White House Black Market, the only one in Colorado.
And the great Aspen Grove restaurants. I love the buffalo at Ted's Montana Grill.
Aspen Grove at Santa Fe and Mineral in Littleton is open Mondays through Saturdays, 10 to 9, and Sundays, 11 to 6. 303-794-0640. That's 303-794-0640. Experience shopping in a whole new light. Sunshine.
I love sledding, but I'm so cold.
Let's go to my house for Ovaltine Hot.
All right, Ovaltine Hot, come on!
The kids will be back soon. Let's make them rich chocolate Ovaltine hot.
Great idea.
Dave's mom's making
creamy chocolatey Ovaltine hot.
Yeah!
Oh, Ovaltine's made with milk.
Yeah, so Ovaltine's creamier than ordinary hot cocoa and full of vitamins and minerals. Swiss Miss and Carnation aren't.
Mom, we're here.
Who wants Ovaltine hot?
Me!
Let's make more.
More Ovaltine, please!
Did you know that more than 40% of U.S. troops deployed overseas as first responders are from the National Guard? They have left their families and jobs to defend our country. But what happens when they return? Cuts in federal funding have eliminated programs to help returning soldiers to continue their education. But you can help. The Colorado National Guard has established a fund to help these soldiers when they return home. Mail your tax-exempt donation to the National Guard Education Foundation, P.O. Box 40889, Aurora, Colorado, 80044. For more information, call 303-667-8387.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Most folks will bounce around to four different vacuums in the time they could have owned just one 8-pound Orrick XL. Now, if you want to spend your money on four different vacuums, that's your business. But if you want a vacuum that protects your investment as it cleans your home, that's my business. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. And find out more about the vacuum that cleans your home, not your wallet.
Hi, it's John Rizzi, editor of Colorado Avid Golfer magazine. Do you love golf as much as I do? If so, join me and Physical Golf's Neil Walkadoff for On the Tee every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on 1150 KNRC. We'll talk about how to play, where to play, and what to play. We'll go inside the tour, across the state, and around the country, bringing in guests from the world of golf. And we'll take your calls, too, even give you a shot at winning something. So join our twosome every Saturday morning at 8 on the tee at 1150 KNRC.
Whether it is left wing or right wing, we often talk about the West Wing.
Can someone talk to me?
Great talk shows make great talk radio. Hear both sides on AM 1150 KNIC.
Thank you for listening.
Filling in for Enid, here is Washington Post Bureau Chief T.R. Reid.
Hi, Colorado. It is T.R. Reid, winding down here before the Doug Kalitz Show. Today is April 14th, and by my calendar, that suggests that tomorrow is going to be April 15th, a fateful day for Americans. It's the day we owe our income tax. If you don't pay by then, and you haven't withheld, you're going to owe them some interest and a penalty for filing late. So let's get it done. I do have some advice, some tax advice here. I'm not a professional tax advisor. I'm just telling you from my own experience. If it looks like you're not going to be able to file on time, if you get busy Thursday or the thing looks more complicated than you thought it would when you sit down to start it at 9 o'clock tomorrow night, you can get an extension. The government will automatically give you a two-month extension. All you have to do is ask for it. The way you do this is you file a form 4868, and you do have to send them a check with an estimate of how much you own. But this is a 4868 is a very simple form. It's got what does it got here? It's got 10 lines. You fill in your name and address and your Social Security number. You estimate your total tax. You figure out how much you've paid already in withholding, and you send them a check for the amount you didn't pay, and that gives you another 2 months. Now, I'm not recommending this. Look, it's a good thing to get things done by the deadline. We should all try to do this. I'm sure the ethicist we heard earlier, Professor Peter Singer, would say that the moral thing to do is to meet legal deadlines if you can do it. But if you can't, you can get an extension by filing Form 4868. Now, let's say you're so disorganized that you get to 1150 tomorrow night, and you can't find a Form 4868 floating around. Well, you can. I got a solution to that one, too. You can call them and make the estimated payment that you owe over the telephone. Here's the number, 1-888-796-1074. That's just the number to call the IRS just in case you figure out late tomorrow night that you're not going to be able to file on time. 1-888-796-1074. You'll then have to pay an estimate, but this is going to save you from having to pay a late filing fee and a penalty charge and interest. Now, the IRS has recently announced that it's going to try to change the rules for auditing taxpayers, and it says, I don't know if I believe this, but it says they're going to try to audit more so-called rich people, people who make more than $100,000. I wonder if that's true, because it's so much easier, of course, to audit the little guy. They have much less complicated tax positions. There's less money in it, but they have the what the IRS considers to be the in terrorem effect, the effect of terror. By hitting your neighbor and gouging him or hitting him for $500 that he didn't pay, they scare everybody on the block into paying on time, and there may be value in that, I don't know. But the IRS says they're now going to focus on rich people who they get not $500 but $50,000 from for not paying their taxes. Probably a pretty good idea, excuse me. When you do get audited, I have some advice for you, because I, my wife and I were once the victims of the most dreaded audit the IRS has ever come up with. This is the TCMP, the Taxpayer Compliance Measurement Program audit. They sort of pull your name out of a hat. When we got hit for this, the auditor said, I need a receipt or a number for every line on your return, every single one he needed a receipt for. Well, we had a shoebox full of receipts, just like everybody does, but it was an incredible pain in the neck to try to come up with an explanation for every number on our return. We finally hit on an interesting theory, which was we just made lists on a yellow legal pad. We just listed all the books we bought and all the miles we drove and everything. And even without receipts, the guy kind of liked that. He would say, yeah, yeah, you got a list. He would accept that. In the end, they zapped us for several thousand dollars, I didn't think fairly. And we went in and appealed. There's an appellate process within the IRS. Be sure to take advantage of this if you get audited. And having appealed, we walked into the office of this IRS auditor, and she had an office that was just jammed full of files, files everywhere you could look. And my wife brilliantly figured out that those were all outstanding audits, and this woman's role in life was to close audits. So my wife said to her, hey, look, we're ready to pay right now if you'll just settle. And just to get the case closed, she settled for a minor amount of money. So if you ever get audited, try that. And that's the pre-tax day news here on KNRC, 1150 AM in Denver.
Time now for the 180-degree turn to the right. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Doug Kellett is straight ahead. It's 3 o'clock.
11 Commission today. FBI Director Robert Mueller said he did not believe that restructuring intelligence agencies would be helpful in avoiding future terrorism.
I do believe that creating a separate agency to collect intelligence in the United States would be a grave mistake. Splitting the law enforcement and the intelligence functions would leave both agencies fighting the war on terrorism with one hand tied behind their backs.
In an earlier appearance before the panel, CIA Director George Tenet said the U.S. intelligence apparatus was in disarray when he took over. Pentagon officials said they rejected the possibility of a plane flying into the Pentagon as they planned training exercises prior to 9/11. Stocks finished still slightly lower today. The Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P all had single-digit losses today. I'll see you later tonight on CNBC. I'm John Siegenthaler, NBC News Radio.
Mike Ditka, NFL Hall of Fame player and coach.
Hey, I know staying in the game is what really counts. So if what you're doing now isn't working, do what I did. Make a change. Ask about Levitra. Levitra, or Denifio HCL. A change might be all you need to stay in the game.
Individual results may vary. For more information, visit Levitra.com. Call 1-866-LEVITRA or ask your doctor if a free trial of prescription Levitra is right for you. Levitra, stay in the game.
Did you know that Napa Auto Parts has all the performance and appearance products you need for your sport compact car? Just check out the new Extreme Streets department at your nearest Napa Auto Parts store. You'll find all the top names like NOS, K&N, Flowmaster, and a huge selection of performance and style accessories from APC. This is the good stuff. So stop by Napa Auto Parts and check out our new Extreme Streets section today.
Get the good stuff.
Napa, get the good stuff.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 71 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin, KNRC News. Summer watering restrictions are on the way for Denver water customers. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic with Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Freeway traffic building very nicely around town right now. No accidents or stalls to block your path. Accident inbound on Auraria Parkway at 7th Street, all gone now. Traffic just about back to normal in there. Southbound Sheridan to Colfax, injury accident, fire equipment on the scene there. This week at Albertson, stock up and save on breakfast favorites like Kellogg's Corn Flakes or Raisin Bran cereal. Your choice, just 99 cents each at Albertson's, helping make your life easier. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
In local news, on Monday, Aurora announced its watering restrictions, and today Denver followed suit. Denver Water Board President Denise Mayes says this year's restrictions, set to take effect May 1st, are much the same as last year's.
Limits watering to do 2 days a week, 15 minutes per zone. Just like last year, no watering between the hours of 10 and 6. No limit on the number of zones.
If your home address ends with an odd number, you're allowed to water your lawn on Wednesdays and Sundays. Tuesdays and Saturdays are the watering days if your address ends with an even number. A zone is the area covered by your sprinkler. During today's board meeting, it was pointed out that as of the end of March, Denver's water reservoirs were below the sagging levels of 2002, but a wet April should make this year's much healthier. Nevertheless, Mayes says that this April rally isn't really enough to preclude watering restrictions. This report brought to you by AC Delco. Jury deliberations in the trial of Michael Blagg could begin as early as this afternoon. Closing arguments are being heard today, with the defense claiming that Blagg's wife, Jennifer, died as the result of a burglary. Prosecutors, meanwhile, are saying that Blagg killed his wife in November of 2001. During his closing argument, prosecutor Frank Daniels says that Blagg was acting funny prior to the alleged murder.
Now, we also have direct evidence in the case. The observations of witnesses at Amatec Dixon of the defendant on November 13th, the interviews of the defendant, his inconsistent statements and odd behaviors.
Jennifer Blagg's body was found in the Mesa County landfill 7 months after she and the couple's daughter were reported missing by Michael Blagg. 6-year-old Abby is still missing and is presumed dead. Last September, Richard Paul White told police he had killed 5 women and dumped their bodies in various parts of the state. Now a Denver grand jury is sifting through the evidence that's been compiled against White. Investigators unearthed the bodies of 2 women in the backyard of a house where White once lived. RTD's Fast Tracks proposal got a little closer to reality now that the Denver Regional Council of Government's Transportation Committee has given its approval to a report that says the project is good and financially sound. The entire Dr. Cog board will review the $4.7 billion plan on April 21st. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche play Game 4 of the best-of-seven series against the Stars tonight in Dallas. Avs lead the series 2-1. Game 5 set for Saturday at the Pepsi Center. Denver Nuggets finishing up their regular season tonight in San Antonio against the Spurs. Nuggets, who are in the playoffs for the first time in nearly a decade, could wind up meeting the Spurs in the first round of the playoffs as well. Colorado Rockies getting back to work with a home game against the Arizona Diamondbacks tonight. It's the second game of the 3-game homestand for the Rocks, who beat the D-backs 7-4 on Monday. April is National Car Care Month, the perfect time to take your vehicle to the real guys at independent service centers featuring AC Delco Auto Parts. Visit an acdelco.com for locations near you. Real car guys know AC Delco. Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is up next. KNRC News Time is 3:05.
No matter what happens, where it happens, or how it happens, get the information you need here first. First, AM 1150, KNRC. KNRC.
Ah, nothing beats a warm Colorado evening relaxing on the patio while something delicious sizzles on the barbecue. Is your patio furniture up to the test? Hi, this is Keith Lair with Lair Fireplace and Patio, inviting you to visit any of Lair's 3 beautiful metro area showrooms to see Colorado's best selection of quality wrought iron patio furniture from O.W. Lee. For 3 generations, the Lee family has been handcrafting fine wrought iron furniture that is not only beautiful, but built to last a lifetime. Hand-forged by skilled craftsmen with incredible attention to detail and design, O.W. Lee is quite simply the finest wrought iron furniture on the market today. Family owned and operated since 1954, Lair's is Denver's oldest, most trusted name in wrought iron furniture. Plus, we have the best selection of quality gas barbecue grills in the state. At Holly and Evans in Denver, 81st and Sheridan in Arvada, and just north of Arapahoe on Broadway in Littleton, there's a Lair's near you. For premium wrought iron furniture from O.W. Lee, it's Lair Fireplace and Patio.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. A bit more than just breezy over the next couple of days, but beautiful conditions as far as sunshine and warm temperatures are concerned. We'll top out around 77 for the high today and then drop tonight to a low of 43. Mostly sunny, 72 tomorrow, sunshine and 73 on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Partly cloudy and 71. KNRC News Time is 3:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now, one of the Mile High City's most entertaining talk personalities, The Doug Kellett Show.
You guys are great. I love listening to the show.
Along with producer Andrew Elfenbein.
Totally and completely different.
Board operations, Jordan Lyles.
Great show.
Now, here's Doug.
Thank you. Welcome in. Good to have you today. 3:08, our time on AM 1150 KNRC. Our phone number is always 303-382-1150, 303-382-1150. My email address, doug@knrcradio.com. If you'd like to reach me that way during the program or anytime after that, you're certainly welcome to do so. Andrew, don't call me a leftist, but call me a progressive Elfenbein. Handling the producing duties. And Jordan Lyles is back where he belongs, at the controls here. He's been gone, man, you've been gone a while, but it's good to have you back. And so Jordan's handling everything else on our show. And if you want to join in, 303-382-1150. We do have a busy program today for you. First, we've got some good news about our radio company that we'll tell you about as we go along here during this hour. So you want to hang around for that. We also will be talking to Senate candidate Pete Coors in the next hour. And we understand he's going to be around about a half hour. So we will be able to take some calls at 4:30 to 5 o'clock. So I hope you'll be around as well. And I'll ask him a few questions about his senatorial campaign, but if you want to get in line then to talk with him as well, we'll take as many calls as we can during that period of time. We will go over, yes, some of the presidential news conference from last night. Unlike everyone else, though, that's simply going over what the president said, or, as I always like it in the commentary afterwards, Tim, it's not what he said, but it's what the president didn't say tonight that's real important. I was I was flipping around with a commentary afterwards last night, waiting for someone to actually say that, because that's what they usually say. You know, it's really, the president made some good points, Dan, but it's what the president didn't say that I think is going to be on the minds of the American people tomorrow, or something to that effect. And so we will talk about it, but we're going to actually focus on the questioning last night of the president. And we're going to play some of these for you, and, you know, I'm going to help the president out, because, as I've said from time to time, this president is not, he's not Ronald Reagan when it comes to glib speech. He's not Bill Clinton. He's not a trained communicator in that regard, and so I'm always happy to help him answer the proper questions from these nitwits called reporters at the White House press corps. So we'll do that for you in a few minutes here as well. There is a funny story that I cannot help myself but relay to you about Air America today. This was on, the Drudge Report had this on earlier, and now the Chicago Tribune website has a story about Air America. As you know, this is the, as they would call it in the news business, the fledgling liberal talk radio network. And it's gotten a lot of promotion, really, on in a number of ways, because Al Franken is one of the guys, of course, doing a talk show. And it's not carried here in the Denver market, and, you know, who knows if it ever will. But there's a funny story out there right now, and